You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
After calling an end to a three-week-long strike, workers trying to return to CNH Global plants in the Midwest have been told to go home. The construction equipment maker declared contract negotiations deadlocked on Monday. Only salaried and replacement workers were allowed to return to the plants in Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois. Not being able to return to their jobs, members of the United Auto Workers returned to the picket lines instead. The union says it has shown that it wants to return to the bargaining table and have filed a complaint over the lockout with the National Labor Relations Board. CNH offered a final contract offer in May that was rejected by the union.
A class action suit filed by 44 former Best Buy IT workers charges the retail giant used age to determine whose jobs to eliminate. The move is part of Best Buy's plan to outsource the management of 650 of its 820 IT employees to a company called Accenture. Stephen Snyder, the Minneapolis-based lead attorney for the plaintiffs, says 82 of the 126 terminated IT workers were 40 years old and older.
These plaintiffs were all solid performers. Their most recent performance scores were at the solid performer or better levels. Nevertheless, they were terminated. And when we looked overall at the terminations and the ages, we found that there was a very strong statistical correlation between higher age and termination.
The plaintiffs are seeking a jury trial where they hope to win back pay and benefits, damages, and an order that Best Buy either reinstate them to comparable jobs or give them salaries until they reach their expected retirement ages.
The portrait being painted of more jobs being added nationally last month doesn't reflect the overall state-by-state mass layoff trend. Nationally, there were 780 mass layoff actions in the July-September period that resulted in more than 131,000 workers being unemployed for more than 31 days. The highest percentage of those mass layoff actions were in manufacturing. More specifically, they were in transportation and fabricated metal product manufacturing. The top five states for mass layoff actions were California, Florida, Ohio, Illinois, and New York. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pop quiz. Nearly a century after women received the right to vote, how many states have eliminated the wage gap between sexes? A study released by the Institute for Women's Policy Research on November 16th says zero. Nationwide, the median wages for women compared to men is 76%. That's a small change from 1989 when it was 69%. Washington, D.C. leads the country in wage equality, with women earning 92 cents for every dollar a man earns. The widest wage gap is in Wyoming, where women on average earn 66% of that which a man earns.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
One of the most despicable aspects of this year's presidential campaign was the deliberate, determined effort by the Republican Party to keep people from voting. I don't just mean the notorious efforts in Florida by first brother Jeb Bush to purge the voter rolls of thousands of eligible African Americans, but of tactics all across the country to suppress the votes of people who tend to vote Democratic. For example, before the election, U.S. Senator Kit Bond tried to sneak a provision into national law that would ban voter registration drives in public housing projects. Another sneak attack came on Election Day itself, when GOP election officials in key states like Ohio simply shorted many Democratic precincts on the number of voting machines made available. The result was that voters faced interminable waits to get to cast their ballots. Lines snaked around city blocks, forcing people to wait 7, 9, or more hours in line. Uncounted thousands of people, who after all have jobs and families to deal with, were driven away from the polls by this artificial logjam. Especially ugly, though, was the kind of racist intimidation experienced in Milwaukee. Just before the election, a flyer was distributed throughout two African-American voting wards, handed out on street corners and in barbershops by a fake group calling itself the Black Voters League. Here's some of what it said. Some warnings for election time. If you've already voted in any election this year, you can't vote in the presidential election. If you've ever been found guilty of anything, even a traffic violation, you can't vote in the presidential election. If anybody in your family has ever been found guilty of anything, you can't vote in the presidential election. If you violate any of these laws, you can get 10 years in prison and your children will be taken away from you. This is Jim Hightower saying, in America, everyone should be encouraged to vote. This is still America, isn't it?
Okay, people, what do we have?
Doesn't look good. Patient's male, 28 years old, trying to get a loan for a new car.
They're checking his credit now.
What's the status?
Looks like he's got some credit problems.
Late payments?
Yes, doctor.
Too many credit cards.
Affirmative.
I've got 6 credit cards and rising. Make that 7.
I've seen this before. What's his credit score?
No response.
What?
He doesn't know, doctor.
Well, he went for a loan without knowing his credit score?
We're losing the loan.
Why didn't he use Score Power from Equifax?
Clear.
How many people do we have to lose?
How's your financial health? Find out with Score Power from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score. All for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit. So check out Score Power at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Doctor, come quick. There's a woman trying to buy a house without her credit score.
It's an epidemic. Run away.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, happy Buy Nothing Day. It's the day after Thanksgiving. Friday, the 26th of November, and as Adbusters, culture jammers have declared the day to take a break from consumption. We'll get into that a little later in the program. In our second hour, we're going to be talking about the vote in Ukraine we're going to have, and here in the United States, we're going to have Bev Harris on, a Black Box Voting. She has found what she says is conclusive proof of vote fraud in Florida. And laid it out for a bunch of CNN cameramen, and they said, we don't think we're going to run with this. We'll talk with her about what that was and why that may be in the third hour, Economic Armageddon. But, of course, it's our first hour of our Friday program, and every Friday our first hour is Brunch with Bernie, features Congressman Bernie Sanders. In 1991, Bernie Sanders became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years. He has since been reelected 5 times, the longest serving, 6 times now, the longest serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. His website is bernie.house.gov. If you'd like to be on the air with Congressman Sanders, our number is 1-866-889-8894. That's toll-free, 1-866-889-8894, or outside the United States, 802-229-2288. Welcome, Bernie.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you
and
here.
And a happy Thanksgiving to all the listeners.
Yes, and to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And happy holidays here. We're starting the whole holiday season. Bernie, two quick things here. I know that you've got some interesting information on Gulf War illness. I want to get into that. But first, Judy in Bloomfield, Michigan, a listener, has written in and says, my daughter's been deployed to Iraq in February. Her body armor, she's apparently a small woman. She weighs about 100 pounds, and she's 5 feet tall. And Judy notes that the minimum height for women in the Marine Corps is 4'10". But they don't have body armor that fits women that size. And she says, I, as her mother, feel pretty helpless because I'm prevented from even providing my daughter with what the Department of Defense should be doing to protect and support all the troops. And she asked me specifically to raise this with you and ask, you know, what might she do as a mother? Or what should we do as Americans to encourage the Department of Defense to be paying more attention to these kinds of issues?
Well, in the midst of all of the tragedies in Iraq and the very great loss of life and injuries that we're suffering is the fact that we sent a whole lot of our young people over there without the kind of armor and equipment that they should be having. If after the show, Tom, you can get me this woman's name, we can call her up and see what we can do. But we are working hard to make sure that all of our soldiers have the armor and the equipment that they need. Here's a particular problem. We have a small person who doesn't have armor that can fit her, and that's something that we can address, try to get the military to move on.
Okay. May I suggest that she also contact her congressperson
absolutely.
Here in Michigan?
Absolutely.
Okay. So if you're listening, Judy, the number for Congress is area code 202-224-3121, and you just ask for your congressperson, 202-224-3121. And
our number is 202-225-4115. And if she contacts us, we will try to do what we can.
Great. And that's directed to Bernie Sanders. You want to give that number right. one more time, Bernie?
202-225-4115.
Great.
Make that call on Monday.
Okay. And now, yeah, because you're in Vermont today. Gulf War illness. This is the depleted uranium and the injections and all these different theories about what's going on. This is something that's been going on for a decade and a half now.
That's right. Well, this is going on. That's exactly right. Since 91.
Yeah.
This is an issue that I have been very involved in, along with Congressman Chris Shays, a Republican from Connecticut, who has done a very, very good job in keeping the issue alive. And the most important thing to understand is that in the first Gulf War, we had some 700,000 troops over there. Approximately 100,000 have come down with one or another ailment, which we now call Gulf War syndrome or Gulf War illness. For many years, some of us in Congress had to fight against the Department of Defense and against the Veterans Administration, who were saying, well, there's really not a problem. These guys don't have a problem. And then as more and more people came forward and we held hearings on the issue, they said, well, yeah, there is a problem. We can see that, but the problem is related to stress, just the psychological problem. Well, stress is, in fact, the big deal. But many of us thought that this was not a stress-related issue because, as you all remember, the Gulf Theater, first Gulf War, was a very toxic environment. The truth of the matter is that inadvertently, American troops exploded an Iraqi arms depot which contained sarin gas. And that was spread out to many, many troops. In addition to that, there were a lot of toxins, a very toxic environment, depleted uranium, pyridostigmine bromide, which was used as an anti-nerve gas agent injected into our soldiers, so forth and so on. The big breakthrough has come just a few weeks ago when the Secretary of the Veterans Administration, Anthony Principi, did the right thing. And he finally made the point that Gulf War illness, in so many words, is essentially an illness caused by exposure to chemicals.
Interesting. That's great.
And from my mind, this was not only a brave and good thing to finally do, but it also raises the issue that there are many civilian-related illnesses, such as multiple chemical sensitivity, such as fibromyalgia, such as chronic fatigue syndrome, which have many of the same symptoms that our Gulf War veterans are reporting. And there are some scientists who believe that the causation of those illnesses is not dissimilar from Gulf War illness, that it is also a result of exposure to low-level chemicals. A number of years ago, interestingly enough, Montpelier, Vermont, my office did work with a woman who just had a carpet installed in her house. The carpet emitted a lot of odor and we think a lot of chemicals. She and her family became ill. Turned out that I learned that this was a national problem. We were on that issue 10 or 12 years ago. We had some success on getting the industry to put labels on carpets and so forth and so on. But bottom line here is, I think there is, through Gulf War illness, an opportunity to learn more about other illnesses that may be caused by exposure to chemicals.
Yeah, and they're widespread in the United States. This is a big problem, and not to mention things like producing cancer and other secondary illnesses as a consequence of chemical exposure. Do you see hearings coming on this?
Absolutely. And we've gotten some money for further research. There's a guy out in Texas, an extraordinarily brilliant researcher named Dr. Haley, who has detected brain damage as a result in some Gulf War illnesses, in some Gulf War veterans. Which he thinks explains a lot of the symptoms that they're experiencing.
Yes.
And that brain damages associated with exposure to chemicals.
Yeah, it's consistent with that. And these are, in some cases, chemicals not dissimilar to the chemicals that are being put on our food, the pesticides and things.
Or in products that we utilize. That's right.
Yeah, the household cleaning products.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's just a toxic soup that we live in these days. I remember when Bill Moyers had his blood tested, and it came back that there were 142 specific known carcinogens in his blood that they were able to identify.
Well, in Vermont, some years ago, when we were working heavily on the issue, we sent somebody from my office out to various schools around the state, and what we found is, especially in cold weather states, where they're shutting down windows and there's not particularly good ventilation, that there is a lot of off-gassing from various products that are making kids and teachers, in some cases, ill.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting how and like the pendulum is swinging. I remember back in the 70s, everybody was trying to button their houses up just as tight
as
they possibly could. And we live in an old house here in Vermont, in Montpelier, that was built in the 1850s. And over the years, it got tightened up and tightened up, and they blew insulation into the walls and this, that, and the other thing. And a couple of years ago, we put in a system that actually exchanges outdoor air with indoor air, replacing the old cracks that used to be in the house, to get fresh air into the house. And
right.
And people are starting to do this.
No, but you're exactly right. In the 70s, because of the high energy costs, schools and other buildings were really shut tight, and that means that some of that off-gassing internally just doesn't get out.
Yeah,
we were producing it 8 hours a day.
We were producing sick buildings. Our number, if you'd like to be on with Congressman Bernie Sanders, or you have a question for him, Congressman Bernie Sanders, the only independent in the House of Representatives, I think of Bernie as America's independent congressman, 1-866-889-8894. And Bernie, Alfred in Wyoming, Michigan is with us. Hey, Alfred, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I've called before. I wanted to bring to your attention, and perhaps the congressman already knows this, but in the Grand Rapids Press today's business section, an Associated Press article by Elaine Kurtenbach says Walmart to allow Communist Party Union in China stores. And there's a Lee somebody or other, division chief of the union's international liaison department, says that unions threaten to sue foreign enterprises that block them. And he has the audacity to kutzpah, whatever that is in Chinese. After all, it is the right of the workers to establish workers' unions, and no company or employer has a right to deprive them of that. So I thought I'd bring that to your attention, that that Walmart, among other American corporations, will be forced to put Chinese Communist Party Union, allow them to organize, and are 123 million of the all-China Federal Trade Union. So I wanted to bring that to your attention, unless you hadn't heard about it.
Well, Alfred, thank you very much for raising that issue. I had heard about it, and if it wasn't so pathetic, it would really be fun.
I mean, isn't that sad?
Yeah.
Walmart,
I just don't know how this is going to go
on. Which
is
now the largest private employer in America, working day and night to stop any American worker in our democracy to form a union. And they are now working with the Communist Chinese totalitarian government to allow their quote-unquote unions there. You're talking about just another aspect of what Walmart is doing, which in so many ways is working to lower the standard of living of American workers by denying them the right to organize, by pushing the health care costs that they're not providing for their workers onto the public, by literally forcing American companies to go to China to produce products as cheaply as they can to sell at Walmart. But this is just another incredible story about a company owned by one of the richest families in the United States, the Walton family.
Yeah, and what's remarkable is that we claim to be championing democracy around the world. The Chinese trade union, by law, there's only one union in the entire country, and it's basically run by the Communist Party of China.
Right.
And where are all the conservatives talking about that's a whole other rant.
Well, the whole issue of China has been a fascinating issue. Because, 20 or 30 years ago, many of our conservative friends, they just hated communism. They just blah, 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 blah. And now, not a word about the authoritarian nature of what goes on in China. They love China now. And in fact, one of the great advantages of an authoritarian society is that if workers in China stand up for their rights, for environmental protection, for democracy, for unions, They go to jail.
Right, unions
so it's
plural.
It's a wonderful place to do business, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a union's plural. They have to join the one union, but it's right. not really a union. It's really the way that the Communist Party makes sure that the workers stay in line and show up and do the bidding of the contractors of not just Walmart, but so many American corporations. I saw where we're dropping tariffs now on bedroom furniture. And we can
China, the furniture industry in China is growing leaps and bounds.
Oh, yeah, it's huge. And it's coming. Our number 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on with Congressman Bernie Sanders, it's our Brunch with Bernie program. 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman here with you 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer. The new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Recall when I said I'd leave no child behind. I guess I changed my mind. Luckily, I bribed you with my tax cut con. The rich got richer, soon the surplus was gone. Prosperity replaced by unemployment and debt. Who could ask for more? It may take amnesia for me to still please you in 2004.
Well, it didn't, unfortunately. Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. It's the Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie segment. All our lines are open, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. Well, actually, Mike in Oregon just called in. Hey, Bernie, you're still there, right?
Yep, right.
Oh, okay, let's go to Mike in Oregon. Hey, Mike, welcome.
Hi,
to the program.
How you doing?
Good.
Good. You know, I'm just so appreciative of hearing your words, Bernie. It's just it's a rare breath of fresh air these days coming from anything having to do in D.C. I'm just wondering how we can be of assistance in making sure that you stay in D.C. with your breath of fresh air.
Well, that's very kind of you, Mike. We won here in Vermont our election with close to 68% of the vote, so we mm-hmm. did pretty well. We have a campaign website, which you could check out, and,
cool.
and that's great. But I think right now what we need to do, and you have in Oregon, you have some very good members of Congress. Peter DeFazio
mm-hmm.
In the Eugene area is one of the certainly outstanding members of the United States Congress. But what we need to do, I think, now that the election is over, is think long-term. And that means organizing politically, bringing people together, not just 2 weeks before the election, but starting right now. How do we bring people together to discuss the important issues, to make sure that working class people don't vote against their own issues, to raise the issues that the media is not talking about? So, you know, Mike, there's a heck of a lot of work to be done, especially with the very right-wing administration in Washington.
Well, I think the media point is just astonishingly important, especially when it continues to be castigated as some sort of left-wing spokesperson, which
right.
is absurd, of course. But.
Right. Well, it's the right-wing media that tells us how left-wing the right-wing media is, because they're the only ones we hear.
Yeah, it's true.
Is this a fiction? But, is this real?
Yeah.
Well, what it is, I mean, it's just the tact. These guys are smart. So what you do is deflect attention away from the reality
mm-hmm.
that the major media in America is owned, by and large, by large multinational corporations, and fewer of them own and control what we see, hear, and read. So one of the things they tell us is that this is a left-wing media. Sure, General Electric and Viacom are clearly left-wing Fox, very left-wing corporations, no question about it.
You know what,
it's a pathetic joke, but it deflects attention away from the real issue that fewer and fewer big companies control the media.
Yeah, well said. Mike, thanks for the call. You know what I think is really ironic, Bernie, is that so much of the programming that people object to is actually owned and put on the air by very conservative corporations, Rupert Murdoch's Fox, for example, some of the most objectionable programming, and you know, not on Fox News, but on Fox programming, that the right wings are concerned about, and people don't get it. They think that, you know.
Well,
they,
Tom, that's a very interesting point that you raise. You know that, and many of the listeners know that Rupert Murdoch is the owner of Fox and the News Corporation, huge American company, it's an international concern, and Murdoch is one of the owners, one of the most significant owners of international media, from Australia to Europe, China, he's into it, so forth and so on.
Yeah.
If you go, if you read the newspaper, you're familiar, Tom, with the Sun newspaper in London?
Yes, yes.
It's one of the major tabloids
owned
in
by
London.
Murdoch. Yeah.
On page 3, every day in the Sun magazine, there is a half-naked woman.
Right. They call her the page 3 girl.
Page 3 girl, every
yeah.
single day.
Yeah.
And this is the family, this is the guy who is upholding moral values in America, to make your point.
Yeah, and the right-wingers, they'll point to the producer of the program. You know, well, you know, Rob Reiner had something to do with that. Not saying that it was, for example, that it was owned by you know, Sumner Redstone of Viacom, or it was owned by AOL Time Warner. It was owned by some corporation that gave all this money to the Bush campaign. I'd also like, and we've got a couple of calls here we'll pick up on the other side of this break that are just coming in, but I'd also like to get it, I'd like to ask you the question, Bernie, how is 20...
Let's talk about it.
Great, 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Brunch with Bernie. We'll be right back.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. I don't want all of my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
After calling an end to a three-week-long strike, workers trying to return to CNH Global plants in the Midwest have been told to go home. The construction equipment maker declared contract negotiations deadlocked on Monday. Only salaried and replacement workers were allowed to return to the plants in Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois. Not being able to return to their jobs, members of the United Auto Workers returned to the picket lines instead. The union says it has shown that it wants to return to the bargaining table and have filed a complaint over the lockout with the National Labor Relations Board. CNH offered a final contract offer in May that was rejected by the union.
A class action suit filed by 44 former Best Buy IT workers charges the retail giant used age to determine whose jobs to eliminate. The move was part of Best Buy's plan to outsource the management of 650 of its 820 IT employees to a company called Accenture. Stephen Snyder, the Minneapolis-based lead attorney for the plaintiffs, says 82 of the 126 terminated IT workers were 40 years old and older.
These plaintiffs were all solid performers. Their most recent performance scores were at the solid performer or better levels. Nevertheless, they were terminated. And when we looked overall at the terminations and the ages, we found that there was a very strong statistical correlation between higher age and termination.
The plaintiffs are seeking a jury trial where they hope to win back pay and benefits, damages, and an order that Best Buy either reinstate them to comparable jobs or give them salaries until they reach their expected retirement ages.
The portrait being painted of more jobs being added nationally last month doesn't reflect the overall state-by-state mass layoff trend. Nationally, there were 780 mass layoff actions in the July-September period that resulted in more than 131,000 workers being unemployed for more than 31 days. The highest percentage of those mass layoff actions were in manufacturing. More specifically, they were in transportation and fabricated metal product manufacturing. The top five states for mass layoff actions were California, Florida, Ohio, Illinois, and New York. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pop quiz. Nearly a century after women received the right to vote, how many states have eliminated the wage gap between sexes? A study released by the Institute for Women's Policy Research on November 16th says zero. Nationwide, the median wages for women compared to men is 76%. That's a small change from 1989 when it was 69%. Washington, D.C. leads the country in wage equality, with women earning 92 cents for every dollar a man earns. The widest wage gap is in Wyoming, where a woman on average earns 66% of that which a man earns.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
We're privatizing Medicare, it's history, and what will take its place will be a prime example, truly ample, opportunity. Oh, there's a hefty deductible on all the drugs you need, and there's co-payments for sure, we're selling your cure.
Welcome back. Billionaires for Bush, I believe that music is from. Welcome back to our program. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment, Congressman Bernie Sanders. And Bernie, just to close up this loop before we go on to we got a couple of callers here. Our number 1-866-889-8894, by the way. Most people think of Vermont, outside of Vermont, as this liberal state because of the way it was portrayed by the Club for Growth in their anti- Howard Dean ads in Iowa, but the reality is that outside of the city of Burlington, which is a college town, most of Vermont is rural, and much and most of that rural Vermont is relatively conservative, and
working class.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're right. Vermont has the image that everybody, you know, in Vermont goes up the Stowe and skis and makes a lot of money, and they sit around the old fireplace in the wintertime. That's certainly not true, as you know. The vast majority of the people in the state of Vermont struggling hard to keep their heads above water. Most of the people in the state live in towns of fewer than 500 people. Rural working class state is what it is.
Yeah, so how does a progressive overwhelmingly win the vote from these from the folks who drive around with a pickup, you know, in their pickup truck with a gun rack on the back, and think of themselves beyond voting for you and the other progressives who won in the state of Vermont, think of themselves as conservatives for some reason?
Because we represent their interests. I mean, you're touching on a very fundamental political point. I consider myself, you know, we have many, many issues that we deal with, but primary focus of the work that I and my staff do is to represent the interest of working class people in Vermont and in America. And those are the issues that we play a leading role in. You know what? Whether you're conservative or liberal or progressive, you need health care. You want to send your kids to college. You don't want your job to go to China. You don't want to be played for a sucker and pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. You are concerned, if you are conservative, about civil liberties and the government monitoring your reading habits. So the issues that we deal with are the issues that people who ride pickup trucks and have a gun rack in their car are concerned about.
Yeah, so how
so
come...
at the end of the day, many of those folks say, well, I don't agree with Bernie Sanders on every issue, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I know he's fighting for me, and we are.
There you go.
And that's why we have been politically successful, but it's not just me. There are other people, you know, there's a guy who was elected governor of Montana, supposed to be a conservative state, a progressive Democrat. I'm a independent, not a Democrat. But you see instances, Peter DeFazio in Oregon, running way ahead of John Kerry in a fairly conservative district. Why? Because he talks about the loss of good-paying jobs to China and other issues that working-class people are concerned about.
Yeah, I wish the Democratic Party institutionally would wake up and get with it on these issues. But
well, Tom, their problem is, and there are a number of Democrats who are on board that program. On the other hand, there are Democrats who get a whole lot of money from corporate interests who don't have the guts to take on the big money interest in this country. And that's the ongoing dilemma that the Democratic Party faces.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Lori in Colorado's on the line. Hey, Lori, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Congressman Sanders. This is Lori. I absolutely love your show, Tom. It's a favorite of mine of all the liberal talk shows I listen to.
Thank you.
I, last week, went to a get-together that Move On put on all across the country where people were suggesting ideas for the future of Move On, the grassroots organization. And my number one concern that I brought up there, my number one strategy, as they called it, was I'd like to see Move On implement putting together a new commercial news network that would be able to actually tell the real news that's not on the news. And I put that forth. I would love to see it happen. I think that the number one problem that we have in our country right now is that there's no real news on the news, or there's very little. And I know we've talked about this a lot. That was one of my main ideas. I like the idea of boycotting. I know you don't, Tom, but I'm pretty frustrated about the situation we have in Congress and in the Senate right now. You know, I'd like to see the Fairness Doctrine get reinstated. I'd like to see the Sherman Antitrust Act brought back. But I don't see that it's possible right now because of the Republican control, the direction the Republicans are going in. And that's the reason why I think it would be good for us to just, you know, go forward with our own news. And I think the Democratic Party will follow if these things take off and this becomes a major you know, the direction of the population, I think the Democratic Party would follow that.
And it may be. So, Lori, is there a question wrapped in there?
No, I just kind of I kind of wondered if you guys feel that there's any way for things like the Fairness Doctrine, things like
okay.
the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Lori, you raised a very important issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the good news here, I mean, the bad news, obviously, is that you have an administration in Washington that is more or less owned by corporate America. And it's going to be very difficult, although not impossible, if we can rally grassroots support, it will be very difficult to move them on many important media issues. That's the bad news. The good news is that in the last couple of years alone, I think that public consciousness on media consolidation and corporate control over the media has increased significantly. And MoveOn.org was one of the groups that played a really, really good role in getting, I don't know how many, millions of people perhaps, to communicate with Congress, with the FCC in opposition to that deregulation effort. So I think, Lori, that we've got to work on a number of levels. Your suggestion about starting a commercial network is a great idea. The problem, obviously, is that it is hugely expensive. $5, $10, $15 billion is what it might take. And I think we might want to look, though, as an example to the Christian Broadcasting Network, Pat Robinson's network, which is very effective on cable. But it is an issue that we should explore. It's something, by the way, that some of us have talked to the AFL-CIO and other groups about. But I think we continue to pursue it. But we should keep in mind that it's a very expensive proposition. I think the other thing that we can do, which is not quite so radical, is to focus on commercial radio. Shows like the Tom Hartman Show and other shows need to be heard all over America. And I think we need grassroots people just getting on the phone, calling up local stations and say, we're sick and tired in a politically divided nation just from hearing one right-wing point of view. Give us the Hartman Show or other shows. So I think there are a number of things we can do, but media is hugely important.
I remember growing up, Bernie, in Michigan, there were two newspapers, the major newspapers out of Detroit, and one had the labor section and the other had the business section, and you knew where they stood. You know, they had an open bias, but both sides were being presented. And now we have all these big corporations that say that they're providing us with right down the middle news, but there's no such thing. There's always an institutional bias.
I don't mind. Whatever we can say about Fox, they're up front. They are a Republican, the arm of the Republican Party. That's who they are.
Yeah.
We can use some arms of progressive thinking as well.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894. Joseph in Las Vegas, Nevada on the line. Hey, Joseph, welcome to the program. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Thank you.
It's a delight to talk to you, Tom. I've been sending you emails because I listen to you at work and I'm unable to call.
Uh-huh.
But I read an article on the Internet this morning that says the WTO approved sanctions on U.S. exports, and I was wondering how that affected our economy.
That's right. Joseph is right. The WTO did approve sanctions. And they made that decision because they thought that the United States was engaged in quote-unquote protectionist actions, and this was an effort from their perspective of creating a more level playing field, punishing the United States.
In other words, how dare we protect our domestic industries? We're not allowed to do that. It's not in the best interest of multinational corporations.
That's right. That's exactly what they are saying. This raises an issue that many people are deeply concerned about, and that is the power of the WTO over our society and over our economy. And the issue here is the very serious attack by a relatively secretive small organization on the people of the United States and our democratic institutions. In other words, as Tom just implied, if Congress wants to protect the steel industry, the furniture industry, family farmers, I don't think that that's a terrible thing to do. In Vermont, family-based agriculture is a very important part of our economy. overwhelmingly, the people of Vermont want to protect family farms. It's good for our state. And you have similar circumstances all over America. And what happens now, if we do protect them, we're in violation of quote-unquote unfettered free trade, and economic action can take place against us.
Yeah.
I think that that's absurd, and this is just another reason why we have got to thoroughly rethink our trade policies, including our membership in the WTO.
And NAFTA. Joseph, thank you for that call. You know, Bernie, I think most Americans don't realize that the Constitution says that if we enter into a treaty, that treaty has the ability to supersede the actual law of the land in the United States. So they should be entered into very carefully. And here you have NAFTA Article 11, which says that corporations can sue the United States as if they were sovereign nations. And they have. The MTBE thing, the funeral home thing out of, in Alabama, I believe it was. There are a number of these cases. And the same thing with the WTO, the corporate power in the WTO. I don't think the average American realizes that
no,
we sign away our sovereignty.
And I'm just looking at the article that Joseph talked about. And what it says is the European Union and other plaintiffs sought formal WTO authorization to retaliate by imposing new duties against various U.S. products. Among the potential targets are cod, fish, textiles, glassware, mobile homes, and apples.
Yeah, in other words, they can punish us because we have dared to protect our domestic industries. When Tench Cox, the small businessman back in 1787, got the first tariffs passed in the United States, and the language said, quote, to protect and encourage domestic industry, end quote. And we've had that for 200 years. That's how we did business.
Now, Tom, you're absolutely right that the American people, when they know it, they know that something is wrong. This WTO stuff is an outrage. The idea that the people of a community who want to protect a vital part of their community are in violation of international law, that they do it, is not only bad economics, it's bad politics.
Yeah.
It destroys our democracy. It takes away power from the people to make important local decisions.
You know what confounds me, Bernie, is how conservatives have this rant about we've given our sovereignty away to the United Nations because of our signing the United Nations, we can't unilaterally declare war on another nation. But the United Nations, by and large, doesn't have the ability to rewrite our laws. The World Trade Organization, however, if here in Vermont we were to pass a piece of legislation, or you in Congress were to pass a piece of legislation, and some corporation somewhere in the world decided that they didn't like it and they challenged it to the WTO. The WTO has the power right now because of this treaty to tell us that we have to go against the will of our legislature, which we have elected.
I think some conservatives, honest conservatives, do know that, but I think that the big money interests just overwhelm them.
Yeah.
And say, hey, this is great stuff.
Yeah, the only conservative I hear talking about it is Ron Paul. I mean, he's about the only one out there, I think.
Yeah, and Ron is quite consistent.
Yeah, and he's a good guy. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Alice in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Alice, welcome to the program.
I wondered if we can prove that our election got stolen, do we, the citizens, is there anything we can do about it?
Well,
I'm very concerned.
Well, the issue here is I'm not of the opinion that this election was stolen. Well, I know there are some who disagree with me. That's my view. But what is absolutely unacceptable, and I know Tom has written and talked about this a whole lot, and he's absolutely right, is that we cannot have voting, we cannot have these touch screen machines in which your vote then goes off to cyberspace, never to be seen again. Ultimately, we've got to have paper. We have to have a paper trail so that in recounts, we can look, in fact, at how those ballots were recorded. And it is very frightening to my mind that there are millions of people who are voting on machines, and we will never have a record of what those votes were.
Yeah, and Congressman Bernie Sanders, in addition to that, now there's a report out this morning, I believe it was this morning, might have been yesterday, in the Free Press, about how, the Bob Fertakis wrote, about how they're actually now starting to get the precinct-by-precinct numbers out of Ohio. And what they're discovering is that in this election, in those precincts that were heavily Democratic, historically heavily Democratic, the number of voting machines that were put in the precincts was cut. Whereas in those precincts that are historically Republican, the number of voting machines that were put in the precincts was increased, whether it was punch card ballot or what, you know, however, whatever technology was used. And as a result, in the heavily Democratic areas, where, which are also heavily working class areas, where people would, you know, show up very early. Sometimes the polls were opening at 7 or 6 in the morning so people could vote before they went to work and or trying to come on their lunch hour. People had to wait as much as 22 hours to vote, whereas in the Republican voting areas, very often the wait was less than an hour. And
that is true. And that's my understanding as well. And that is an absolute unacceptable outrage. The guy in Ohio who's Secretary of State is a very partisan Republican.
He's in charge of the Bush campaign. Ken Blackwell. He was in charge of the Ohio Bush campaign. And
I mean,
he's
that raises, so above and beyond the touchscreen balloting, there is another issue.
Yeah.
That is, why is it that with all of the technology out there, we can't make sure that people vote, go in and vote quickly and easily and don't have to wait online for hours?
Yeah, well said. 10 minutes before the hour, we're with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Friday afternoon, our regular Friday afternoon Brunch with Bernie segment. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots, organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. On Saturday, as hundreds gathered in San Francisco's Union Square for a rally in solidarity with locked-out hotel workers, Mayor Gavin Newsom announced at his office across town that a deal had been reached to suspend the stalemate for a 60-day cooling-off period. Vinnie Lombardo has more.
Unite Here Local 2 members, who'd been working without a union contract since August 14th, struck at four San Francisco hotels September 29th and were subsequently locked out at 10 others by the Multi-Employer Group, a consortium of San Francisco's 14 largest hotels. Rory O'Connor, a bellman at the Four Seasons, says the workers wanted a wage increase but voted for a two-week strike when the hotels tried to eliminate retiree medical, prescription, and dental coverage from about 1,000 Local 2 members.
We've accepted lower wage increases in return for good benefits. It's almost like it's part of the compensation package.
Another sticking point is the contract's length. Union members say they'd like to renegotiate in 2 years while the hotels want a 5-year deal. To Do, Secretary Treasurer of Unite Here Local 2, says the union also wants to synchronize San Francisco hotel contracts with other cities.
We bring our fight to across North America city. We bring our fight to Hawaii, to Monterey, to Chicago, to New York, to send them the message that we're not going to be isolated in San Francisco.
The rank-and-file workers at Saturday's rally were elated at the news they'd soon be back on the job and are hopeful that the publicity generated will parlay into the contract they want. For now, the pickets are down. On Tuesday, 4,300 hotel workers will start rotating back into their shifts without conditions while the talks continue. But until a deal is inked, the situation remains tenuous, and Local 2 members say they are prepared to resume the pickets if a fair contract isn't offered. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinnie Lombardo.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And who's going to be the one to say it was no good what we done? I dare a man to say I'm too young, for I'm going to try for the sun.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. And Bernie, on your website at bernie.house.gov, you write about how, according to the New York Times, the average American is $7,500 in debt to credit cards and that they may be in for a big surprise. Can you talk about that?
Right. This is what we call credit card company loan sharking. You know, Tom, in the old days when people talked about loan sharks, they were talking about thugs who hung out on street corners and used to beat people up or break their knees if they didn't pay back the exorbitant interest rates that they lent money out for. But right now that's gone from, you know, thugs on street corners to the heads of the largest credit card companies and banks in America, banks like Citigroup, MBNA, and Capital One. And this is what's going on. In recent years, there has been a scam that I call the bait-and-switch scam, and our office has been working really hard on it. Probably you and all of the listeners have received promotions from the credit card companies saying, sign up right now, zero interest, or 2%, or 4% for the first 6 months. You're familiar with that, right, Tom?
Sure, sure.
Yeah. And they sent out about 5 billion of these promotions a year.
Wow.
What people don't know is that the bottom end of the contract, often in very small print, is language which says the company can raise these rates and change the terms of the policy at any time they want. So what happens is that if, in fact, you were late 3 years ago paying your mortgage or you were late on a phone bill, they can take your interest rates from 5% to 15% to 28%. So we have millions, well, I don't know how many, but many, many thousands of Americans who are now paying far higher interest rates than they even know that they're paying, and certainly much higher rates than they planned to pay. In addition to that, late fees, you know, if you're a day late paying off your credit card bill, are very exorbitant, have gone up very, very high.
Is it time to re-regulate this industry?
Pardon me?
Is it time to re-regulate the credit industry?
Oh, absolutely. These guys are getting away with murder. There was a very good front page story in the New York Times last Sunday on this issue. Frontline did a piece on it. But it is a scam that is costing consumers huge sums of money.
This is the wonders of the conservative, absolutely free market, free for big corporations, eh?
Right.
Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Sanders, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good to be with you.
And we will
you.
See you again next Friday.
Right. Bye-bye.
Thanks. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people... Yes, smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
After calling an end to a three-week-long strike, workers trying to return to CNH Global plants in the Midwest have been told to go home. The construction equipment maker declared contract negotiations deadlocked on Monday. Only salaried and replacement workers were allowed to return to the plants in Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois. Not being able to return to their jobs, members of the United Auto Workers returned to the picket lines instead. The union says it has shown that it wants to return to the bargaining table and have filed a complaint over the lockout with the National Labor Relations Board. CNH offered a final contract offer in May that was rejected by the union.
A class action suit filed by 44 former Best Buy IT workers charges the retail giant used age to determine whose jobs to eliminate. The move is part of Best Buy's plan to outsource the management of 650 of its 820 IT employees to a company called Accenture. Stephen Snyder, the Minneapolis-based lead attorney for the plaintiffs, says 82 of the 126 terminated IT workers were 40 years old and older.
These plaintiffs were all solid performers. Their most recent performance scores were at the solid performer or better levels. Nevertheless, they were terminated. And when we looked overall at the terminations and the ages, we found that there was a very strong statistical correlation between higher age and termination.
The plaintiffs are seeking a jury trial where they hope to win back pay and benefits, damages, and an order that Best Buy either reinstate them to comparable jobs or give them salaries until they reach their expected retirement ages.
The portrait being painted of more jobs being added nationally last month doesn't reflect the overall state-by-state mass layoff trend. Nationally, there were 780 mass layoff actions in the July-September period that resulted in more than 131,000 workers being unemployed for more than 31 days. The highest percentage of those mass layoff actions were in manufacturing. More specifically, they were in transportation and fabricated metal product manufacturing. The top five states for mass layoff actions were California, Florida, Ohio, Illinois, and New York. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pop quiz. Nearly a century after women received the right to vote, how many states have eliminated the wage gap between sexes? A study released by the Institute for Women's Policy Research on November 16th says zero. Nationwide, the median wages for women compared to men is 76%. That's a small change from 1989 when it was 69%. Washington, D.C. leads the country in wage equality, with women earning 92 cents for every dollar a man earns. The widest wage gap is in Wyoming, where women on average earn 66% of that which a man earns.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by Billionaires for Bush.
If you're looking for a little good news from the November 2nd election, check out the Clean Money campaigns in Arizona, Maine, and North Carolina. Instead of surrendering their state governments to the big money interests that control Washington and most other state capitals, people in these three states have authorized full public financing for candidates who agree to run clean, which means that these candidates accept none of the corrupting contributions that special interests, primarily corporations, routinely dole out to Democrats, Republicans, and anyone else willing to be bought. By providing a pool of public funds for public elections, we can get public officials that are no longer financially beholden to corporate, union, or other private funders who always have a private agenda attached to their checks. In Maine, this clean election option has been available for three election cycles, and the results are astonishing. 77% of Maine's state House members and 83% of its state senators have now been elected without taking a dime in corporate money. It changes the whole political dynamic, for legislators are free to cast their votes without first checking with their big campaign contributors. Likewise, in Arizona, 23% of state senators and 58% of House members are now free of any dependence on private campaign donors, as are 10 of Arizona's statewide elected officials, including the governor, attorney general, and all four of this year's winning candidates for the State Corporation Commission. Also, North Carolina provided the clean election option this year to candidates for its top judicial seats. And the clean candidates won both races for the Supreme Court and two of the three seats on the Court of Appeals. This is Jim Hightower saying, full public financing is real reform. To bring it to your state, county, city, school district, or whatever, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
Well, Mr. Quinton, I have your loan application here. I see you want to finance one of our big screen TVs.
Oh, yeah, I love that TV.
Of course you do. The thing is, your credit report has a few hiccups or bumps.
Well, bumps, yes.
What we call red flags or warnings.
You see, I can...
Actually, you have huge gaping chasms of incredibly bad decision-making.
Okay, I can explain.
I mean monumental credit mistakes. I mean, phenomenally ridiculous, laughable, really. I mean, oh, Mr. Quinton, I gotta frame this one.
Before you go for a loan, be prepared with Score Power from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for just $14.95. It's the first step to getting the things you want. So check out Score Power at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number, if you have a question or comment for Bev Harris. Bev is the founder of blackboxvoting.org, blackboxvoting.org, the author of the book Black Box Voting, and this extraordinary and courageous warrior for integrity in our voting system. And we're very fortunate. And by the way, Bev won't say this, so I will. Blackboxvoting.org is supported by contributions from people who want to see transparency in the voting in the United States. And you can I'm sure, do that right off the website there at blackboxvoting.org. Is that right, Bev?
That is right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And is there another website also that you're involved with now that's a spinoff from this?
Well,
We're not exactly involved with it, but there's another one I recommend that I think is great. It's called HelpAmericaRecount.org. Help America Recount. Now, you see, as a 501c3 nonprofit, we cannot have any kind of partisanship. And in situations where our research indicates that the election should have another close look, it necessarily becomes partisan because some candidate, you know, has got to go in and ask for a recount.
Yeah.
And they usually have to pay for these. So HelpAmericaRecount.org is a fund which is helping to pay for recounts.
I see.
It was set up by Joan Krawitz in Chicago, and she's just done a great job with it.
That's marvelous. Okay, great. Bev, you just came back from Florida, and you found some interesting results that from our conversation and from this piece you wrote on blackboxvoting.com. I believe it was
.org.
Anyway, or .org. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for correcting me, .org. CNN was not interested in. I find that just absolutely amazing. Tell us what you found down there in Volusia County, Florida, and what happened when you tried to share it with the mainstream media.
Well, this is really interesting because we went in and we were asking for a very critical record of the vote, because understand that the paper ballots, even when there are paper ballots nowadays, they're locked in a vault. They don't look at them. They simply run them through a machine, and whatever the machine interprets is the vote. So the only other record that anyone can actually look at, because you can't look at the ballots, is a receipt that is printed by the voting machines themselves at the polling place on election night. And it's got the results from that polling place. Granted, that is a machine interpretation by computer, but it's a separate thing that is done at the central headquarters.
Right.
And it is signed by all of the poll workers. And so this is very important, because this receipt needs to be compared with the results that they send in with the Secretary
of State. So let me just set this up, Bev, so that our listeners, just to make it very, very clear.
Right.
I go into vote in my local precinct, which in the case of where I live here is the town hall here in Montpelier, Vermont. I go in there. There's 8 or 10 booths, you know, where you go in and you fill in the little bubble on the paper ballot, actually. And when I'm all done, and everybody else in that precinct, when we're all done, we go over and we put our ballot into this big box that looks like a shredder, actually. It's got a slot on it, and it goes like that. And you put the ballot in there, and it eats the ballot, and it's got the Diebold name on it. And what that does is it optically scans that ballot. It's got a little computer in it. The computer just, you know, notes all of the votes that I made and theoretically just purely adds them up. And then at the end of the day, no matter how many little booths there are in that room for these paper ballot, anyway, at the end of the day, there's basically just one machine that's counting them all in that particular precinct, and that's in my city hall here, for example, where Louise and I went to vote. And that one machine at the end of the night, when all the voting is all done, prints out a receipt. It prints out a poll tape that says, here's how many people voted, here's who they voted for, and it's got a place for all of the people who are working in that precinct to sign it and say, yes, I certify, I was here, I saw these people vote, and this is what the machine says. Now, so we've got that absolute solid paper trail. Then that paper, that poll tape, that summary of that day's activity from all the hundreds of precincts in an individual county, or dozens depending on the size of the county, goes to a central location where it is then added to, that information is added to the aggregate for the county or the district or the state or whatever, right? Pick it up from there?
Right. And then there's a separate computer system at that central county headquarters, which tallies everything up and submits it to the Secretary of State. So you've got two different systems, and they're both made by Diebold or by ES&S or whichever vendor, but they're two different computer systems, and they should match up. So what we wanted to do in Florida is match them up. Very simple audit diagnostic. And so we did a public records request. On election night, we did it for everywhere in the country, and we went in and we went to pick up these polling place tapes so we could compare them with what was sent to the Secretary of State in Florida. Well, lo and behold, in Volusia County, they didn't give us the polling place tape copies. They gave us something that was printed 2 weeks later and had no signatures.
Interesting.
And so, you know, in your auditing, you want to look at the original source documents, or at least a copy of them. So I said, that won't do. We need to have them. And we went through really some amazing situations where they sent us to a warehouse. When we showed up at the warehouse, they booted us out, and then we found a bunch of
We talked about this.
Right,
we talked about this on the air last week. Where you got a fight over a garbage bag.
We finally got copies, supposedly, of all of the tapes. Officially, and we went in six times, and after the sixth time, we left with a stack a foot and a half thick high of copies of these. Well, we inventoried them, and lo and behold, 59 precincts out of 179 are still missing their signatures or missing their data or missing the zero tapes, which say there's no votes preloaded on the machine or whatever. So a lawsuit has now been filed to set aside the election in Volusia County.
Were there did you find discrepancies or errors between the signed poll tapes and the numbers that the county was reporting to the state?
There were some discrepancies, but the bigger problem is that fully one-third of them are missing.
Are just plain old flat-out missing.
Just missing. And so the only way that we can verify this election at this point is to pull the ballots themselves.
Yeah.
And we're negotiating the ground rules for that right now because we want to make sure that we don't get, you know, do that in a way that we can't even look at them, as happened in Ohio. We had a citizens group watching a hand count of the provisional ballots in Cuyahoga County, and they were put behind a line that was so far back they couldn't see anything at all on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So it was completely pointless to watch.
Yeah.
So we, you know, obviously we want to negotiate ground rules for this that are appropriate. But it's completely bizarre. Not just that, though. We found some other things. We found, for example, although they told us that they're central tabulator, the main machine that counts everything in the county and sends it to the Secretary of State. They said, well, that was not networked. It was standalone. It wasn't connected to the Internet. And we found out, actually, it was networked. It had two networked hard drives, and we obtained a log for it that showed that there were at least two attempts to get into the machine by remote over the phone line.
On election night?
These were not on election day. These were shortly before the election, and it was very concerning because people were repeatedly entering the wrong passwords. So that's a bad...
So somebody was trying to hack that machine.
Or else someone was repeatedly entering the wrong password because they forgot it. But then there was a warning sign after that, a warning message that I'm going to have to turn over to some computer people because I wasn't sure what it meant.
Yeah.
But, you know, so obviously it wasn't standalone and connected to nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was very clear. And there were some other things. The absentee votes that they reported. They reported 89,000 to Susan Pinchon, who's a citizen from Volusia County who filed the lawsuit on behalf of Florida Fair Elections Coalition.
Right.
But they actually, on their website, they only have 84,000. So there's 5,800 votes that are just absentee votes that are just completely unaccounted for.
Hmm.
So, you know, as I keep saying, it's just bookkeeping.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, having a checkbook that really, really does not match what the bank statement says.
Well, Bev, do you see this as, I mean, there's really two issues here. One is because these ballots were counted by machine, and those machines could have been programmed to say, okay, every fifth ballot, whatever it says, reverse it or whatever. I mean, you know, we don't know what the program was on the machine that was reading the optical, you know, the optical scanner machine, because that's just a computer as well. But setting that aside, from what you've been able to see with the poll tapes versus the printouts in the county and the attempts to penetrate the computer, do you have a sense that there is something very wrong with this election just based on this one county that you've looked at, or does it look more like these are the kind of things that happen when you've got clunky technology, it wasn't well thought out, it's vulnerable,
In this case, it's not clunky technology. There's something wrong. I mean, the best case scenario is that they had a huge staggering breakdown in election procedures, but there's actually I do have a theory. There are some indications that are certainly consistent with fraud. My gut feel is it may be local, county, not on the county level, not on a grand scale,
right,
for Volusia.
Yeah.
We have some evidence we haven't yet released that we've pretty much identified what a likely method is, and it has some other corroborating evidence with it, and we identified that actually not ourselves, but with connection of some other election supervisors who have been so kind as to consult with us. when we asked them some questions about the procedures.
Interesting, interesting. Bev, let's take a couple of calls if that's all right.
Sure.
We have about 3 minutes left. Dave in Humboldt County, California, is on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bev. This country could certainly use a few more like you. A couple of thoughts for you. One, these machines were in place because the GOP leadership fought to keep them in place, and they are still in place. Do you expect they'll try to use them again in 2 years, or will we have some way to get rid of them this time? And the second point for you, you, I'm sure, are sophisticated enough to know, tabulate all of your evidence on battery-powered equipment. If you put your own data into computers, these high-tech hackers go right in, and what you put in will not be what comes out.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Bev, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, I do think that they're going to try to use the machines. They're going to try to go right on. They're going to try to claim that this election went off without a hitch. It didn't, but, you know, very little auditing has been done, and it's a tedious process to do the auditing. And the first stage of it is you have to get the public records request filled. And, of course, here in Florida alone, we have 14 counties that we're going to have to actually take into litigation because they're just violating state law and refusing to provide the documents in a timely manner.
They just don't want to share the information with you.
No, and there's 20 more that have been kind of slow about it, but it looks like we'll get it, and then we've got it from another, you know, 20 or 30 of them. In Ohio, almost all of the counties have stonewalled. And that is at the directive of the Secretary of State, Ken Blackwell. This guy is absolutely the modern-day equivalent of Catherine Harris.
Yeah, well, in both states, you have the Republican Secretary of State also being the head of the Bush for President campaign. And
exactly.
It seems like an odd juxtaposition. Bev, we've got a couple other callers with questions for you. Do you mind sticking around over the break and answering a few more questions?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, great. We do have to take a break here. It's 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We're talking with Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.org. Blackboxvoting.org, www, of course. Our number, 1-866-889-8894. We will be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
You've supported her through every accomplishment in her life.
Cross, pull, I tied my shoes.
While your ultimate goal is to teach her to stand on her own.
Let go, I can do it.
There are things she just can't do without your support.
There were drugs and alcohol at the party.
Talk with the teens in your life. And if they're in substance abuse treatment and recovery, support them. Help them turn the hardest thing they've ever done into their greatest accomplishment. For information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs.
In the U.S. is a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
People try to put us to death.
Talking about my generation.
Just because we get around.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bev Harris with blackboxvoting.org is our guest on the program. And Bev, let's take a couple of quick calls here. Julie in Humboldt County is on the line. Hey, Julie, welcome to the program.
Wow, thanks for letting me on. Hi, Tom. Hi, Bev. I admire you both very much. Bev, I've been watching your website kind of on a daily basis. I'm really proud of the work you're doing. And the fact that you're doing it at such a grassroots level, it's a fantastic thing.
Thank you.
Mostly I wanted to ask you guys to comment on what's going on in the Ukraine right now and how interesting and compelling it is that there's Republicans talking about the elections in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it could be us talking about the elections here at this
Based on exit polls. The exit polls in the Ukraine show that the loser won and the winner lost, and therefore, Julie, thanks for the comment and call. Bev, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was so surreal. I was watching it break on CNN, and they're saying, and they're being criticized because their elections there aren't transparent. And we're sitting here dealing with public officials who are stonewalling us right and left and won't even let us look at the basic data. I'm just going, well, they could be reporting on the United States.
Yeah.
Except that they're just saying, oh, it's the Ukraine. Look over there. Don't look here. We have very similar problems here, frankly.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's really remarkable, Bev, and maybe you're not familiar with this. This was in The Guardian today. Today's Guardian with the newspaper in the UK. The revolt, as it were, in the Ukraine was mobilized and paid for by the United States. Yeah, it's really interesting. We've got a whole system. I encourage you to check out this article, U.S. Campaign Behind the Turmoil in Kiev, by Ian Trainer in The Guardian. After we finish up this conversation, I'm going to get into the details for our listeners of it. But, I wanted to showcase you in the time that you were on.
Oh, yeah, and kind of back to one of your earlier questions. It was so strange because the day we saw this on CNN, I had just had CNN follow me around Florida, and I had showed them documents that were, we had orange tags on every document with a severe discrepancy.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed them a stack that was 6 inches thick of documents with orange tabs and said, look at these. And they said, we're not interested in that. They wanted to talk about, I commend them for covering the story that people are looking into the election, but they very badly wanted to limit it to accidental
glitches.
Well, yeah, nobody wants to have a Dan Rather moment. Nobody wants to be the one who jumps on a story before it's triple, quadruple, quintuple
right.
checked out and then end up having their career damaged. Let's take a couple other quick calls here. We've only got about 3 minutes here in this segment, 2.5 minutes. Bill in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. What's up?
I had a question for you and or Bev. Whether the excellent work that she's doing down there, both in Florida and Ohio, that we deeply appreciate, are we going to expect any kind of an end result? Obviously, I'd like to see the other person in the White House, but do you think that will really materialize if, in fact, there is fraudulent activity more outgoing than what we already anticipate?
I can speak to that.
Good question, Bill.
And if the news isn't very good. I actually, through the Help America recount, there was an attorney down in Florida, Lowell Finley. The absolute drop-dead deadline in Florida for contesting the election on a statewide basis for the presidential was last Tuesday. And I actually was, working on the research side of it.
So it's too late.
Working at something like 4:30 in the morning,
yeah.
Monday night, Tuesday morning. And there just was not enough evidence to reach the bar that is set. Florida has a very high standard
this was the
for what you have to do to contest the election.
Yeah.
And he basically had to be able to prove that 380,000 votes could be switched to evidence of problems.
Yeah.
Well,
and you couldn't pull it off. Bev, we're out of time. I'm sorry, but a great point. You're doing wonderful work, and people can actually read the entire story of what you're talking about right there on your website, blackboxvoting.org, right?
Right.
Okay, yeah. Let me encourage people, blackboxvoting.org, Bev Harris's site. Bev, thanks so much for being with us today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
After calling an end to a three-week-long strike, workers trying to return to CNH Global plants in the Midwest have been told to go home. The construction equipment maker declared contract negotiations deadlocked on Monday. Only salaried and replacement workers were allowed to return to the plants in Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois. Not being able to return to their jobs, members of United Auto Workers returned to the picket lines instead. The union says it has shown that it wants to return to the bargaining table and have filed a complaint over the lockout with the National Labor Relations Board. CNH offered a final contract offer in May that was rejected by the union.
A class action suit filed by 44 former Best Buy IT workers charges the retail giant used age to determine whose jobs to eliminate. The move was part of Best Buy's plan to outsource the management of 650 of its 820 IT employees to a company called Accenture. Stephen Snyder, the Minneapolis-based lead attorney for the plaintiffs, says 82 of the 126 terminated IT workers were 40 years old and older.
These plaintiffs were all solid performers. Their most recent performance scores were at the solid performer or better levels. Nevertheless, they were terminated. And when we looked overall at the terminations and the ages, we found that there was a very strong statistical correlation between higher age and termination.
The plaintiffs are seeking a jury trial where they hope to win back pay and benefits, damages, and an order that Best Buy either reinstate them to comparable jobs or give them salaries until they reach their expected retirement ages.
The portrait being painted of more jobs being added nationally last month doesn't reflect the overall state-by-state mass layoff trend. Nationally, there were 780 mass layoff actions in the July-September period that resulted in more than 131,000 workers being unemployed for more than 31 days. The highest percentage of those mass layoff actions were in manufacturing. More specifically, they were in transportation and fabricated metal product manufacturing. The top five states for mass layoff actions were California, Florida, Ohio, Illinois, and New York. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pop quiz. Nearly a century after women received the right to vote, how many states have eliminated the wage gap between sexes? A study released by the Institute for Women's Policy Research on November 16th says zero. Nationwide, the median wages for women compared to men is 76%. That's a small change from 1989 when it was 69%. Washington, D.C. leads the country in wage equality, with women earning 92 cents for every dollar a man earns. The widest wage gap is in Wyoming, where women on average earn 66% of that which a man earns.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. The U.S. campaign, a U.S. campaign behind the turmoil in Kiev. I'll tell you about that in just a few minutes. Let's take a couple of calls first, though. If you'd like to be on the program, our number 1-866-889-8894. Sean in Indianapolis. Hey, Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hey, I think Beth could have stayed on for a whole hour, and we still would have not covered everything that we wanted to cover.
You know, I don't disagree. What was your question? What's on your mind, Sean?
Well, I was going to ask. First of all, I was going to make a comment. I am just absolutely stunned that what happened, what's going on over in the Ukraine right now, hasn't fueled anything over here. I am just absolutely stunned.
Well, here's why it's happening, Sean. What's happening in the Ukraine is part of an organized campaign that was planned actually even before the election, because there and let me make this value neutral, by the way. This is the fourth government now where a group which includes representatives of the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, agencies from the United States, non-governmental organizations like Freedom House, this whole collection of folks, let's see here, USAID and George Soros's Open Society Institute. So, you know, conservatives, liberals, right across the board have gotten together, and they've put up money to go into these countries where they're pretty sure in advance that the election's going to be rigged, and take down that regime by exposing the vote fraud. And three of these four elections, they have done this successfully. It's run out of Belgrade, Yugoslavia, by a group of computer literate young people who are called the Center for Nonviolent Resistance, and we've funded them to the tune of $14 million for this deal in Kiev in the Ukraine. We put up $41 million to overthrow Milosevic back in October of 1999, and they say that in this article here in the Guardian, that this thing emerged out of the anti-Milosevic student movement, that it's very fancy. I mean, it's good marketing. They brand it. They have catchy single word branding. In Georgia for last year, the country of Georgia, there was a movement, again, funded by us and put together with these people called Kamara. In Belarus, it was called Zubar. In the Ukraine, it's called Pora, means high time. They have a simple slogan that always appears. In Serbia, for example, it was Gotovje, which means he's finished. A reference to Milosevic. They have logos. They had a logo in Serbia of a black and white fist clenched fist in the air. This is masterful marketing, says the Guardian. And in the Ukraine, their logo is a ticking clock. And the major thing that they did was they set up these parallel vote tabulations. That is, they had over 1,000 people there who organized exit polls. And on Sunday night, the exit polls were released before the vote was released. So the people all, you know, thought that they knew who had won.
Well, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, and the exit polls, in fact, here the Telegraph says the exit polls are seen as critical because they seized the initiative in the propaganda battle with the regime. Invariably appearing first, they receive wide media coverage and put the onus on the authorities to respond. And then the final stage in the U.S. template concerns how to react when the incumbent tries to steal an election. In Belgrade, Tbilisi, and now Kiev, where the authorities initially tried to cling to power, the advice was to stay cool but determined and to organize mass displays of civil disobedience, which must remain peaceful but risk provoking the regime into violent suppression. And it's just fascinating that we're doing this around the world. And maybe it's time to do it here.
So we don't have a certain interest in a single candidate winning. We're just concerned with that the election is carried out fairly.
Actually, according to this article, in one of these four countries, the candidate that we backed with this kind of a system was actually the anti-American candidate. We just wanted to, the goal was simply to say there is a regime in power that's going to rig the elections and therefore is not legitimate. And so we're going to support the legitimate candidate. Yeah.
God, that is so strange.
Yeah, it is. It's just remarkable. Now, this is the first I've learned about it. This was published today in The Guardian in London, and no doubt there'll be a lot more coming out about this, and I will keep you up to date as time goes on. Sean, thanks for the call.
Let you know how loopy things are. The last couple of days, we had a snowstorm in northern Indiana and a tornado in southern Indiana.
Oh, we had here in Vermont, there's this woman, they call her Dorothy. This happened yesterday. She was standing on her porch grilling pork chops or something for Thanksgiving, and she got picked up by a local hurricane or something, a tornado, and deposited 50 feet away. She's in the hospital with four broken ribs. And we just don't have that kind of weather here in Vermont normally. We had thunderstorms and lightning yesterday that were absolutely wild, and we've just never seen it before. It's just unprecedented. So, you know, things are strange. Sean, thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and I've got two line. Boy, I'm not sure what's who here. Is this Bill? Is that Xavier or Bill there on line one? Oop, let me pot it up. Hello? Bill in Grand Rapids or Xavier in Santa Cruz? It must be Xavier. Oh, it's Xavier in Santa Cruz, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I lost track of where I was there on the screen. One of those.
Yeah. Well, I have two quick points here. One is the word list that Newt Gingrich composed.
Yes.
I think it's really important that we get a word list and stop using their words like partial birth abortion and things like that.
Yeah.
But the main point I wanted to make is listening to Bev Harris and in reference to the Dan Rather moment, and I think you had a situation with Common Dreams, that article that you wrote. I think that was really honorable of you to. But we need to watch about Karl Rove tactics, and I think that's what's happening a lot of times.
Yeah. Well, it's a balancing act. It's like the Common Dreams piece where I trotted out an article that had incorrect information in it because I hadn't taken the extra day to triple-check my facts. We corrected it within 3 hours.
That's honorable of you, but what I'm trying to say here is that it's possible, and I don't, you know,
no,
maybe
but here's,
not in every
here's,
situation,
here's, here's
but Karl Rove may implant a piece of incredible false information to red herring us away from the rest
of the
truth.
Well, I think that's what happened to Dan Rather. There's no doubt in my mind that those forgeries were made by conservatives. But you know, but you still, no matter where you are, you've got to be very careful on this.
Exactly.
I've had now two writers from The Nation on online blogs or in publications claim that they're the ones who set me straight. Neither one of them were. By the way, it's just so weird. I mean, I've got people on the left coming out and saying, "Well, I'm the guy who set Hartman straight," and it really sensitizes you to how important it is to get it right. And so I have some empathy, frankly, for those CNN guys down there in Florida with Bev. She's saying, "Here's the anomalies," and they're saying, "Well, we're not sure we want to be the first to break this." And they have a lot more on the line than I do, frankly, because when I write for Common Dreams, I'm not paid for it. And whereas when, you know, you work for CNN, particularly if you're on-air talent, you're paid fairly well. And it's not the kind of job that you'd want to lose. So anyhow, Xavier, you raise a good and important point. And it's just for all of us who are in the public eye, it's a very, very delicate balance.
Yeah, because if we're going to win, I just need to impress that on people to vet your facts. And it's Okay. Well, thanks.
Yeah. Well said. Thank you. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Margaret in Illinois on the line. Hey, Margaret, welcome to the program.
That was quick. I listened to your part on the Gulf War syndrome.
Mm-hmm. With Bernie.
And have you ever had Joyce Riley?
I have not. I don't know who she is.
Oh, you don't?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, she's a nurse who is quite an authority on the Gulf War. She's one that really brought it to light.
Oh, great. Okay, we'll look around for that.
I don't know a website, but she's quite an authority on that. And Chuck Harder's had her on.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was just absolutely great that Bernie was able to tell us now that the Veterans Administration has come out and said this is apparently the result of exposure to chemicals and that it's real.
There's another thing I was surprised he did not mention, and that is the depleted uranium.
No, he mentioned depleted uranium.
I must have missed that.
Yeah, it was. He said he went through a list of the things that they were exposed to, and that was in the list.
I've heard that is very high. There is a website called iDust.com.
Mm-hmm. iDust.com, okay.
Or .net, I'm not sure which. But it is a website that goes through all of this information about depleted uranium and how bad that is and how it's just destroying, it's just all over.
Yeah.
And it's being blown all around, no telling how far it's going to get.
Oh, and it has a half-life of 3.5 billion years.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's not supposed to be important. That's what our guys are going over there and getting exposed to. And
that's right. Yeah, and then they come back here, and we're seeing an increase in kidney disease, of course, which is the chemical side effect.
I think that's probably the biggest reason for all of this.
The explosion of leukemia that they've been seeing in Iraq since 1991, since the first Gulf War, plus the soldiers coming back here with kidney problems. Depleted uranium at a chemical level is toxic to the kidneys as a heavy metal, sort of like lead and any kind of uranium. But it's also, of course, radioactive. And now we're starting to see increased numbers of birth defects and things here among soldiers who were participating in the Gulf War. And you raise a good point, Margaret. Thank you for the call, and I appreciate your calling in. 17 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Kate in Arcata, California on the line. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment and hear you maybe discuss what we might be able to do. When you look at the both, I felt that we really needed to protest the war a lot sooner, but what we did didn't feel like it was very effective. I mean, I went on marches in our town, but you know what?
You know,
did
Kate,
it do?
We had more people around the world and in the United States out marching in the streets to tell Bush, don't invade Iraq until the UN says that, hey, we've got some evidence, because the evidence was increasingly showing that there were no weapons there. In fact, I still, to this day, my jaw drops every time some con on TV goes, well, you know, France thought there were weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah.
Germany thought. No, they didn't. That's why they didn't authorize the attack. They didn't think they were there. They were listening to Hans Blick, who was saying, you know, it sure doesn't look like there's anything here, and give us another month and we can tell you for sure. And Mohammed al-Baradei, who's saying we're finding no evidence of any weapons of mass.
Seems like we're being pressured a lot by artificial timelines, you know, things that are maybe not artificial, maybe they're even legal, but they don't serve us anymore.
The
vote in 2001.
This is just simple manipulation,
deadline.
Margaret. I'm sorry, Kate. This was just simple manipulation. The thing with Iraq, it was the October surprise for the 2002
right.
midterms.
What I wanted to bring up was that in the countries where protests and being out in the street are effective, which we're seeing in Kiev right now, it looks like, and happened in Prague, those are very small countries where a lot of people are closer to the capital.
Right.
And I'm just wondering how we could stage boycotts or being out in the streets, something like that, which is obviously effective. It has its, you know, its power. But how can we do that when we're so spread out, which seems to be, you know, one of the problems of our democracy, because we're such a big country? So if you have any thoughts on that, or if anyone else does, I'm
sure.
interested in you know, taking action, but it would be great if it could be more effective.
I think we have to go a step beyond that. You make a very good point, because these European countries are generally fairly small and very high population densities relative to the United States. And so people can go out in the streets and like that. We've tried that, as I said here. I think the larger issue is that we must be doing our organizing just right across the board. We need to be waking people up. We need to be encouraging alternative media, whether it's the internet, websites like commondreams.org or buzzflash.com or opednews.com or like that, truthout.org, and on the list goes, some great websites out there. Whether it's encouraging your local radio stations to carry liberal talk radio, whether it's working and reading the pieces that come out from mediamatters.org and calling the local media, your local television stations on it when they have conservative bias in their news, and it's just endemic. It's so thick and
I think we do need, if that's the case, and I agree with you that probably is what we need to do. It's impractical for us to do what they're doing in Kiev. But if that is what we're doing, I think we need to continually reinforce in our minds that we are acting and that it's effective action.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though we're not pouring in the streets.
And we are.
It feels so much more rewarding to be out in the streets.
But see, more people voted for John Kerry than voted for Ronald Reagan, who had the record for the most people voted for. Now, some of that, of course, is population is growing. But there was a huge response. It was huger for George W., apparently. And that just says that we need to get our message out more effectively. And frankly, I think, without resorting to conspiracy theory, just as simple reality, the fact that there are hundreds, some 600 hours a day of conservative right-wing talk radio programming in the United States, and there are fewer than 40 hours a day of liberal talk radio program. There's my show, there's two or three other independent shows, and there's Air America. I frankly think that that has an awful lot to do with how things have gone down in the United States and what we need to change. And we need to get the word out to people. Kate, thanks a lot for the call. I got to move along. I do appreciate it. John in Belding, Michigan on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. You know, I always hear you talking about the corporations and how they're strangling America. And I've heard so much about this, but I'm sure you can, in your way, eloquent way, can explain this. We have the biggest corporation that runs our country by the Federal Reserve. I mean, that's the biggest money trust in this country, and it's the model of that is all through Europe and the whole world, the World Trade Organization. How can we allow that to stand? I mean, could you explain how it was allowed to even happen?
Well, this is an argument that goes all the way back to the founding of this nation. The big fight, the big battle between Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton was that Hamilton wanted us to have a central bank. And Jefferson did not want there to be a central bank. He felt that the states should do their own banking and create their own currency. And then Hamilton created a central bank, ultimately, or Hamilton's followers. And we had two national banks, actually, that were private corporations. And both of them went bankrupt. The first one in the 1820s, the second one in the late 1850s, as I recall, or 1849.
So we're still fighting them, in other words.
It's still a debate. But it has nothing to do with the WTO. The Fed is not a model for the WTO. The WTO is about trade, and the Fed's about money. Two separate issues. But thanks for the call, John. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. It's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves.
I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is the Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Recently, AT&T announced it is outsourcing 140 jobs from a Massachusetts call center to New Delhi, an American trend that's providing widespread debate. WIN reporter Leanne Caldwell has more.
In his nomination speech, President Bush said the world is changing, but he will protect American jobs.
We now compete in a global market that provides new buyers for our goods, but new competition for our workers. To create jobs, we will expand trade and level the playing field to sell American goods and services across the globe.
But at the New York Society for Ethical Culture in Midtown Manhattan, National Affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine, William Greider, said American trade indebtedness to other countries, which is closely tied to wage arbitration, is breaking the shrinking middle class. The liberal magazine, The Nation, and the economically conservative, The Economist, hotly debated outsourcing. According to some studies, more than 400,000 jobs will be outsourced to cheaper markets this year, a trend that seems to be inevitable by free trade policies. Sitting on The Nation side of the table, Lori Wallach, director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, said the world of the World Trade Organization is a contradiction and that the WTO are simply handcuffs. But Clive Crook is deputy editor for The Economist. He said the American economy is the most resilient and new industries will replace those lost to outsourcing.
American unemployment, despite intense globalization of the past 2 decades now, has not gone up.
But those new industries are unknown. By the end of the debate, the audience was still split in its opinions, but an estimated 90 jobs were moved overseas in those 2 hours. For WIN, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
Some of us are illegal, and others not wanted. Our work contract's out, and we have to move on.
600 miles to the Mexican border. They chase us like rustlers, like outlaws, like thieves.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you. Our quote for the day is actually 2 quotes for the day. The first, for those of you who may have to drive today, from Mahatma Gandhi. The drive comment will become apparent in a minute. Gandhi says, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. That's all of us to hold for our hope. And our quote for the non-drivers today, for those of you who are going to stay home and watch football on TV or whatever, from Ben Franklin, beer, is proof God loves us and wants us to be happy. That from Ben Franklin, our quote from the founder, one of our founders for the day. The Ukraine state television is apparently in revolt now. This is from the BBC. This just reported. Journalists on Ukraine's state-owned channel, which had previously been giving unswerving support to the Prime Minister Viktor Yanukovych, have joined the opposition, saying that they had had enough of, quote, telling the government's lies, end quote. Journalists on another strongly pro-TV, pro-government TV station have also promised an end to the bias in their reporting. The turnaround in news coverage after years of towing the government line is a big setback for Yanukovych. The news staff at UT1 were not alone. A couple of hours earlier, journalists on the pro-government private channel 1, took a similar stand. So it's spreading now in the Ukraine. Now, meanwhile, here in the United States, word is spreading of voter fraud in Ohio. This from freepress.org, an article by Bob Fitrakis in the Columbus Free Press today. They're starting to look at the individual ballots. In the city of Columbus, for example, he says, where voters waited in the heavily Democratic wards between 2 to 7 hours to cast the majority of their votes, the turnout was 52.7%. In the affluent white suburbs of Columbus, where you might have had more votes for George Bush, the turnout was 76.15%. Why did more people turn out? Well, it turns out that there were more voting machines put there. They were pulling the voting machines out of inner city areas, out of heavily Democratic areas, out of ethnic areas, and moving them into suburban areas where they were, where they knew that they would have a heavy Republican vote. And so, you know, no line, no wait, you get a higher turnout. And it's not, because the turnout is calculated, of course, by the number of people who are willing to wait long enough to vote. So Ohio is starting to look stinkier and stinkier as the folks in the Ukraine are saying, hey, wait a minute. It's a Tom Hartman program, The True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
After calling an end to a three-week-long strike, workers trying to return to CNH Global plants in the Midwest have been told to go home. The construction equipment maker declared contract negotiations deadlocked on Monday. Only salaried and replacement workers were allowed to return to the plants in Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois. Not being able to return to their jobs, members of the United Auto Workers returned to the picket lines instead. The union says it has shown that it wants to return to the bargaining table and have filed a complaint over the lockout with the National Labor Relations Board. CNH offered a final contract offer in May that was rejected by the union.
A class action suit filed by 44 former Best Buy IT workers charges the retail giant used age to determine whose jobs to eliminate. The move is part of Best Buy's plan to outsource the management of 650 of its 820 IT employees to a company called Accenture. Stephen Snyder, the Minneapolis-based lead attorney for the plaintiffs, says 82 of the 126 terminated IT workers were 40 years old and older.
These plaintiffs were all solid performers. Their most recent performance scores were at the solid performer or better levels. Nevertheless, they were terminated. And when we looked overall at the terminations and the ages, we found that there was a very strong statistical correlation between higher age and termination.
The plaintiffs are seeking a jury trial where they hope to win back pay and benefits, damages, and an order that Best Buy either reinstate them to comparable jobs or give them salaries until they reach their expected retirement ages.
The portrait being painted of more jobs being added nationally last month doesn't reflect the overall state-by-state mass layoff trend. Nationally, there were 780 mass layoff actions in the July-September period that resulted in more than 131,000 workers being unemployed for more than 31 days. The highest percentage of those mass layoff actions were in manufacturing. More specifically, they were in transportation and fabricated metal product manufacturing. The top five states for mass layoff actions were California, Florida, Ohio, Illinois, and New York. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pop quiz. Nearly a century after women received the right to vote, how many states have eliminated the wage gap between sexes? A study released by the Institute for Women's Policy Research on November 16th says zero. Nationwide, the median wages for women compared to men is 76%. That's a small change from 1989 when it was 69%. Washington, D.C. leads the country in wage equality, with women earning 92 cents for every dollar a man earns. The widest wage gap is in Wyoming, where women on average earn 66% of that which a man earns.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Kids across America are digging deep. President Bush's tax cuts mean big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. Paying for them won't be easy, but these kids are ready to do their part. In 2003 alone, George Bush put every child in America $7,400 into debt. To these children, we have one thing to say.
Thanks, kids.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
A question for those of you who voted for George W. Were you casting your ballot in support of letting industry put more toxic pollutants in your air and generally turning environmental policy over to the tender mercies of corporate polluters and plunderers? Well, whether that's what you meant or not, the Bushites are using your vote as their excuse to do all of the above and more. Quote, "The election is a validation of our philosophy and agenda," crowed Michael Levitt, Bush's corporate-minded head of the EPA, claiming that they now have a mandate to do environmental favors for various industries. First up will be their perversely named Clear Skies Bill. Far from clearing our skies, it will let utilities and other polluters pump an additional 42 tons of deadly poisons into our air and lungs each year. Ironically, this industry-written legislation would undermine the clean air standards enacted by George's own daddy, Bush the First. Also, the White House and oil lobbyists are reviving their old fight to allow oil drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The plunderers lost this fight in George's first term, but now they claim that the election gives them a green light to roll their trucks, rigs, and pipelines into the heart of this national refuge. Another priority is to allow more mining and other destructive energy projects on public lands and parks in western states, a proposal that, in the past, has angered many conservative ranchers, farmers, hunters, and anglers. In addition, the Bushites are planning to weaken other environmental protections at the behest of big developers, timber barons, and others. Millions of Americans who thought they were voting for a man who stands for high moral principle are about to see the real Bush, a man who stands for the right of corporate power to run roughshod over our natural resources and public health. This is Jim Hightower saying, Bush talked a lot about God in his campaign, but he was deceivingly quiet about what he plans to do to God's green earth.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me. You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get Score Power from Equifax.com. Score Power gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life. Get Score.
Score power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, Taco.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Trying to track down our Jaws music. There we go. Welcome back to the program, 7 minutes after the hour. The best of the rest of the news on this day after Thanksgiving. Our quote for the day for those who intend to stay home and watch football or hang out with the family. From Ben Franklin, from one of our founders. Beer? Beer. Yes, beer. Ben Franklin said, is proof God loves us and wants us to be happy. And a parallel quote for those who may have to go out and drive. Mahatma Gandhi, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Key, of course, is to never give up, to paraphrase Winston Churchill, or to quote him, actually. Never give up. Never give up. The FDA, remember Stephen Graham? Or, I'm sorry, David Graham, the whistleblower, the FDA whistleblower, who testified before Congress week before last about Vioxx. Talked about how he had tried to raise this issue of Vioxx and gotten slapped down by his supervisor. And then he goes before Congress, and one of the members of Congress, I believe, it might have been a senator, actually, I don't recall, said, are there any other drugs? Could you name five other drugs that you think threaten the public safety? And ironically, they just asked him for five, and so he said yes. Meridia, Crestor, Accutane, Saravent, and Bextra, he said. And apparently it was a case of open mouth, insert foot, at least in terms of internal politics. And this is, of course, one of the things that's very wrong with our system. And that is that the FDA's, the studies on which that the FDA relies on to determine whether or not a drug is safe are paid for and done by the drug companies themselves, number one. And number two, the salaries, to a large extent, of the people within the FDA are paid for by the industry that manufactures the drugs through licensing and fee arrangements and all sorts of odd things. But this is it. We're basically funding, to a good chunk, the testing for safety and enforcement apparatus of the FDA with industry money. And although there's actually some fairly strong protections for whistleblowers in industry, if you work, you know, if you work for a private corporation and you blow the whistle, there are laws that will protect you. But ironically, if you work for the government and blow the whistle, those laws are nowhere near as strong. And of course, in my mind, the reason for that is that members of the House and Senate did not want to give that kind of strength to people who might be potential whistleblowers on their own staffs, which is disappointing, let's say, at the very least. A failure of government. Not a reason to abolish government by any means, but certainly a reason to reform it, to be concerned about these. These are issues. And the FDA is one of the agencies that, in my opinion, right off the bat, we should stop this whole conservative nonsense of, oh, bring corporations into government, have corporate government partnerships, isn't it wonderful, everything will be just fine. No, I'm sorry, 100,000 Americans had heart attacks or strokes as a result of this corporate government partnership around this Vioxx issue. 23,000 of them estimated have died. I mean, consider how many people died on 9/11. 3,000 people, 23,000 died from Vioxx, and it could have been stopped. And this is the result not so much of just pure dysfunction in government, but of the cons coming along back in the Reagan era and saying, you know, let's just start handing government functions over to private corporations. Let's get the private corporations in bed with government. Now, as you know, I've said it a million times, many times on this program,
I am all in favor of our having private corporations. I own one. I'm totally in favor of it. Free enterprise is a wonderful thing, and it's done great things for the United States and for the world. And there are many things that we, the people, should be doing for ourselves without the influence of corporate special interests. Isn't it interesting, by the way, how throughout much of the last, take the last 50 years, the first 30 of the last 50 years, whenever somebody said special interest, you understood that they were talking about corporations trying to influence legislation. And the cons hijacked that phrase. And now they suggest, you know, special interest groups like Arnold Schwarzenegger. They suggest special interest groups, that must be unions or that must be environmentalists. Schwarzenegger saying in his campaign for governor that he would not take money from special interests. And they said, oh, who's that? And he said, well, you know, environmentalists and labor unions. Well, will you take money from corporations? Well, of course, they're not special interests. This is either somebody who is brain dead, which I don't believe, or somebody who is deeply in bed with the corporations, which there's a lot of evidence for. Schwarzenegger having his meetings with Ken Lay, private meeting with Ken Lay and other energy industry senior officials at the Beverly Hills Hotel in the middle of the California energy crisis, which then was used to bring down Gray Davis and install Arnold Schwarzenegger. To this day, he has not provided an accounting of that, although the issue keeps getting raised. But I get off track here. It's time for us to take the FDA back, to say the Food and Drug Administration is to protect us. We, the people, collectively decided that we would like to know that our pharmaceutical supply is safe and efficacious, that these drugs actually work, and that they work in a way that produces more benefit than harm. That if there are side effects, those side effects are more than made up for by the positive effects of them. We would like to have some confidence about that, we said. And so we created the Food and Drug Administration. We, with our tax dollars, we invested our tax dollars in this. And now it has been, to a significant extent, the functions of the Food and Drug Administration have been privatized. And here's the result. 23,000 dead Americans, 100,000 heart attacks and strokes. And that apparently is just the tip of the iceberg. And the guy who says it's just the tip of the iceberg now says this from today's news, from USA Today, today. This was article was in today's USA Today. I'm going to be transferred and I don't want to go. The lead sentence of the article in USA Today, Food and Drug Administration whistleblower David Graham says he expects as soon as next week to be forced from his job in the Office of Drug Safety. Graham's attorney, Tom Devine, added that Graham has no legal recourse against such a move. Devine says, quote, he's going to be exiled from work reviewing drugs and put to work in an office of the commissioner. He'll be paid to fill space under the watchful eye of a babysitter. Now, I know there are many people who would love to be paid to do anything. But, you know, this is a guy who really wants to be doing his job, wants to be doing it right, is genuinely concerned about the public safety, is well-trained to do that, has a long history of public service. And because he dared get in the way of the drug companies and their profits, the most profitable industry in America. Seriously, it is. Although the oil companies are making a run at it here under the Bush administration, showing record profits. I mean, record, like going back to Rockefeller's days in the 1890s, record profits. Nonetheless, the most profitable single industry in the United States is the pharmaceutical industry. And this guy made the mistake of taking them on. This guy made the mistake of doing his job and telling the truth. And it just seems to me that it's time for us to be telling our elected officials, we would like to know that our commons, that the pharmaceutical companies, that our drug supply, that our healthcare system, for that matter, is safe and works and benefits all of us. And we're willing to pay for that. We're willing to invest money in that, just like we invest money to build roads and bridges. We want to have pharmaceuticals available to us that actually work and that won't kill us. Thank you very much. And I would think at the end of the day, the pharmaceutical companies would want the same thing. Although, truth be told, Merck made a lot of money on Vioxx being kept on the market after the initial studies
indicated that there may be a problem. But, of course, making a lot of money is what private for-profit corporations are supposed to do. Their first charter, their first obligation is to make a profit. Their second charter, their second obligation is to make a product or a service. You make the profit with the product or service, but what the product or service is secondary. The first obligation, the Supreme Court has even ruled this. If your first obligation is to the stockholders, is to generate a return on investment. What the Supreme Court has ruled is that if you are an officer or director of a corporation and you make a decision that doesn't directly benefit the profit of the corporation, you have done what's called failed your fiduciary responsibility. And that's actually a crime in the United States. On the same context, here we have, again, industry intruding itself into government. Fat cats in the corporate world going to politicians and saying, let me cross your palm with some cash, do what we want. This release from Washington, out of Washington, D.C., news release today from the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club today released documents showing, this isn't the Sierra Club's opinion, this is what the documents show, that the Bush administration gave special treatment to Texas-based Davis Brothers Oil Producers, Inc. Gee, what a surprise. The Bush administration gave special treatment to a Texas oil company when it reversed a long-standing policy in order to allow oil and gas drilling underneath certain national parks, preserves, and refuges, regardless of potential environmental impacts. They go on to say more than a dozen National Park Service areas could be impacted by the rule, including Big Thicket National Preserve and Padre Island National Seashore in Texas, New River Gorge in West Virginia, and Big Cypress National Preserve in Florida. These documents, said Brant Mention of the Sierra Club's Lone Star chapter, this is the Texas chapter of the Sierra Club, these documents show that the Bush administration bent over backwards to help its friends in the oil and gas industry, even when the facts showed that its policy would harm national parks. This administration seems to think that there are two sets of rules, one for oil and gas companies and one for everyone else. Pat Gallagher, the legal director of the Sierra Club, adds, the Bush administration broke the law. But will he be held to account? I consider it highly unlikely. I'll be amazed if this even makes the mainstream media, the corporate media, because the big media in the United States, owned by big corporations who also have their hands out, who also want government favors, who also want to have their own wholly owned president, vice president, members of Congress, of the Senate, of both parties. So they're not going to make it too hot when politicians like George W. Bush give out special favors to their corporate buddies. It's all about the corporate buddy system these days. It's time for us to, we the people, to reinvolve ourselves in the political process and say, you know, we're going to take back our country. We're going to elect officials. We're going to elect people to the House and the Senate and to the White House who actually, and at a local level, who actually represent our interests, Republicans and Democrats. This isn't a partisan thing. Who represent our interests. 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Every morning you send your kids out into a world filled with drugs, peer pressure, alcohol, even violence. How can you be sure they have the skills to find their way home safely? That they can make good decisions when you're not watching over them? This is Barry Williams, urging you to call the Girls and Boys Town National Hotline for help and advice at 1-800-448-3000. The call is free anytime, day or night. 1-800-448-3000. Just call. Your kids will be glad you did. Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Yeah, it is, actually, because the issues are on our side. People do want health care. People do want and to have security in their old age. They do want Social Security. People do want to have good jobs. They don't want to see their jobs going off to China. People do want to have a clean environment. We do want to have national parks that serve as islands of sanity in the general madness of the world. And that protect the few remaining wild areas in the United States. We actually do want this stuff. It's Buy Nothing Day. If you're familiar with this thing that Adbusters.org, the Culture Jammer folks started several years ago. Some of the networks actually wouldn't even run their ad. This is their 30-second ad for Buy Nothing Day.
The average North American consumes 5 times more than a Mexican, 10 times more than a Chinese person, and 30 times more than a person from India. We are the most voracious consumers in the world. A world that could die because of the way we North Americans live. Give it a rest. November 26 is Buy Nothing Day.
today, Buy Nothing Day. So what do you do? Well, you can make gifts, you can bake gifts, you can... Well, there's a whole lot of things you can do. Well, let's get into that in a little bit after this. But first, let's take a call here. Alan in Tennessee is on the line, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number if you'd like to call in. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Yes, I was trying to figure out this book by Friedrich Nietzsche called Thus Spoke Zarathustra.
Yeah.
Was he talking about pre-war Germany?
Also Sprach der Zarathustra, yeah. Frankly, I don't know. I never read that book by Nietzsche. It's one of those things you're supposed to read, you know, in high school, but somehow I managed to avoid it. So I just don't know. Sorry.
Okay. Maybe somebody call in and knows.
Yeah, was the Zarathustra book... I liked the music by... who was it? Holtz? No. There's the music of the same name, you know, that became the theme song for 2000... that movie, 2001, I believe it was.
It sounds like he's doing a lot of complaining against the government.
Who, me?
Against religion.
I beg your pardon?
It sounded like he was doing a lot of complaining in the book. I read just part of it.
Oh, Nietzsche was.
Yeah,
about government and religion. Well, you know, people have been complaining about government and organized religion for a long, long time. Both government and organized religion, have very important roles to play, I think, in our lives. But we have to be sure in both cases that they're not roles that get hijacked. That government, in the case of a Republican democracy, is actually serving we the people. That the government is of, by, and for we the people, to paraphrase Lincoln. And organized religion, that, you know, it's for the religious, for, you know, people who want to participate in organized religion have absolutely no barriers to that participation. And yet it's also not forced on people who don't want to participate in it. I mean, these are just fundamental concepts, whether Nietzsche is talking about them or whether, you know, modern day politicians or whatever are talking about them. These are just core concepts, Alan. In fact, it's interesting, and thanks for bringing this up. I appreciate your call, and good to hear from you. Here we have now Mr. Scalia talking about this issue, and this I find absolutely startling, that Scalia is trying to revise history. Scalia now has just come out and said, "The Founding Fathers never advocated the separation of church and state." Scalia cited early this from the online edition of the Jerusalem Post. He gave a talk in a synagogue in New York. Scalia cited examples of support of religion in the public sphere by George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Ben Franklin. He goes on to say, America believes in a personal God that takes interest in the affairs of man, and then quotes a line from the Psalms. It says, "The faithful will surely prosper." He says, "I think it's no accident that America has prospered." Well, those are all nice sentiments, and I don't disagree, speaking as a person who, you know, I consider myself spiritual, at least, and probably religious. I am a more or less church-going Christian. But he's got it wrong about the founders. And then he brings this thing around to Nazi Germany, and that's really spooky. Let me talk about that right after this break, because this is an important issue for us. 29 minutes after the hour.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
After calling an end to a three-week-long strike, workers trying to return to CNH Global plants in the Midwest have been told to go home. The construction equipment maker declared contract negotiations deadlocked on Monday. Only salaried and replacement workers were allowed to return to the plants in Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois. Not being able to return to their jobs, members of the United Auto Workers returned to the picket lines instead. The union says it has shown that it wants to return to the bargaining table and have filed a complaint over the lockout with the National Labor Relations Board. CNH offered a final contract offer in May that was rejected by the union.
A class action suit filed by 44 former Best Buy IT workers charges the retail giant used age to determine whose jobs to eliminate. The move was part of Best Buy's plan to outsource the management of 650 of its 820 IT employees to a company called Accenture. Stephen Snyder, the Minneapolis-based lead attorney for the plaintiffs, says 82 of the 126 terminated IT workers were 40 years old and older.
These plaintiffs were all solid performers. Their most recent performance scores were at the solid performer or better levels. Nevertheless, they were terminated. And when we looked overall at the terminations and the ages, we found that there was a very strong statistical correlation between higher age and termination.
The plaintiffs are seeking a jury trial where they hope to win back pay and benefits, damages, and an order that Best Buy either reinstate them to comparable jobs or give them salaries until they reach their expected retirement ages.
The portrait being painted of more jobs being added nationally last month doesn't reflect the overall state-by-state mass layoff trend. Nationally, there were 780 mass layoff actions in the July-September period that resulted in more than 131,000 workers being unemployed for more than 31 days. The highest percentage of those mass layoff actions were in manufacturing. More specifically, they were in transportation and fabricated metal product manufacturing. The top five states for mass layoff actions were California, Florida, Ohio, Illinois, and New York. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Pop quiz. Nearly a century after women received the right to vote, how many states have eliminated the wage gap between sexes? A study released by the Institute for Women's Policy Research on November 16th says zero. Nationwide, the median wages for women compared to men is 76%. That's a small change from 1989 when it was 69%. Washington, D.C. leads the country in wage equality, with women earning 92 cents for every dollar a man earns. The widest wage gap is in Wyoming, where a woman on average earns 66% of that which a man earns.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. There's this movement in the United States right now among people on the religious right to suggest that the founders thought that they were creating a theocracy, that they wanted to create a government that was in bed with and interpenetrated by and cooperating with religion. And what's particularly disconcerting about this is the amount of misinformation around this. There are several websites, a rather famous one out of Texas, that have all these quotes of the founders on them that are simply made up. You can find no evidence that any of the founders ever said these things. And it's really quite startling. And here now, apparently Scalia has been reading this stuff. A lot of it has been turned into tracts, and they've been passing this stuff around. And I get these emails from time to time. You go back and you look at the sources, and these are just literally made up. In this article in the New Jerusalem Post, Scalia said that the founding fathers never advocated the separation of church and state. And they go on to say, Scalia cited early examples of support of religion in the public sphere by George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Ben Franklin, the last of whom went so far as to argue at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 for the institution of daily prayers. And I have to say what? I have read Ben Franklin's autobiography. And I've also read Into the Mystery, which he wrote, which was his you might call it the earlier autobiography, or Toward the Mystery, I guess it's called. And here's a quote from Ben Franklin. I mean, this is an actual real quote you can find in any library or bookstore. Quote, I have found Christian dogma unintelligible. Early in life, I absented myself from Christian assemblies, end quote. Ben Franklin left Boston, where he had spent some of his earlier years, as a young man. He fled to avoid the religious takeover that was happening in New England. He ended up in Philadelphia. Ben Franklin was a deist. He was strongly opposed to organized religion throughout his life. and regularly actually ridiculed it, which is, you know, as I said, something I wouldn't do. But Ben Franklin did. And to have Scalia quoting Franklin as saying, all right, it was religion, it's just pretty amazing to me. I mean, it flies in the face of everything that we know about Franklin from his own words. And then he also quotes Washington and Jefferson. So let's see what are these thoughts. George Washington, for example. In Thomas Jefferson's personal diary, on February 1, 1799, he wrote the following. And again, this is a matter of absolute public record. You can find it any, you know, this is not a secret or anything. This is stuff that, until this revisionist history movement came along, where the Pat Robertsons and the Jerry Falwells of the world started trying to reach out and take control of government and realized that in order to do that, they had to rewrite history. Until that movement started about 20 years ago, more or less, in the United States, using, in many cases, lies and fabrications, what I'm going to share with you was just common knowledge. This, from Thomas Jefferson's personal diary, February 1, 1799, and this is published all over the place. Quote, when the clergy addressed General Washington on his departure from the government, it was observed in their consultation that he had never, on any occasion, said a word to the public which showed a belief in the Christian religion. And they thought they should so pen their address as to force him at length to declare publicly whether he was a Christian or not. They did so. However, the old fox, I'm still quoting from Thomas Jefferson in his diary, however, the old fox was too cunning for them. He answered every article of their address, particularly except that, which he passed over without notice. The part about whether or not he was a Christian. Jefferson concluded that Washington, quote, never did say a word on the subject in any of his public papers except in his valedictory letter to the governors of the states when he resigned his commission in the army, wherein he speaks of, quote, the benign influence of the Christian religion, end quote. Jefferson goes on to say, this is continuous, so this is still reading from his diary. I know that Governor Morris, who pretended to be in his secrets, that's in Washington's confidence, and believed himself to be so, has often told me that General Washington believed no more of that fundamentalist Christian system than he himself did, end quote. In fact, George Washington helped work out the treaty with Tripoli, which was signed during the Adams administration, and the Treaty of Tripoli in 1797 reads, and I quote, as the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion, as it has in itself no character of enmity against the laws, religion, or tranquility of the Muslims, and as the said states never have entered into any war or act of hostility against any Mohammedan nation, it is declared by the parties that no pretext arising from religious opinion shall ever produce an interruption of the harmony existing between the two countries, end quote. James Madison, on February 21st, 1811, when he was President of the United States, he vetoed a bill passed by Congress that authorized government payments to a church in Washington, D.C. to help the poor. Why? Well, let me give you Madison's own exact words. Quote, because the bill vests and said incorporated church and also authority to provide for the support of the poor and the educated of the poor children of the same, which would be a precedent for giving to religious societies as such a legal agency, in other words, legal authority, in carrying into effect a public and civil duty. In other words, Madison was saying caring for the poor is something that should be the responsibility of the government, and we should not be giving the money to churches to do it. If they want to do that, that's fine. Let them use their own money, but we do not give government money to churches for any purpose. And he said this law that he vetoed on February 21st, 1811, would have set a terrible precedent. Very often, the text on the Jefferson Memorial is quoted by folks like Scalia. Jefferson wrote in a letter to Benjamin Rush in 1800, he wrote, and I quote, I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny imposed upon the mind of man. And this is presented by those religious folks who want to take control of our government, or get lots and lots of tax dollars from our government, as Jerry Falwell is doing right now, as Pat Robertson is doing, as Reverend Moon is doing,
Reverend Moon, of course, a huge supporter of the Bush administration, owner of the Washington Times, the pro-Bush right-wing newspaper in Washington, D.C. Anyhow, that's the text that they quote. Jefferson saying he has sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny imposed upon the mind of man. What's the context, though? When Jefferson said that, what was he talking about? Well, let me share with you the actual letter from Thomas Jefferson to Benjamin Rush 2 months before Jefferson was elected president. He was talking about the campaign that was going on and how the clergy were trying to participate in politics. Well, let me give you just Jefferson's. Instead of my telling you what he said, I'll just quote Jefferson. Here's the actual letter. Dear Sir, I promised you, this is Thomas Jefferson to Benjamin Rush, 1800. Dear Sir, I promised you a letter on Christianity, which I have not forgotten. I do not know that it would reconcile the genus irritable vatum, that's Latin for the angry poets, who are all in arms against me. Their hostility is on too interesting a ground to be softened. The delusion on the clause of the Constitution, now he's talking about the First Amendment here, by the way, the delusion on the clause of the Constitution, which, while it secured the freedom of the press, covered also the freedom of religion, has given to the clergy a very favorite hope of obtaining an establishment of a particular form of Christianity throughout the United States. And as every sect believes its own form to be the true one, everyone perhaps hoped for his own, but especially the Episcopalians and the Congregationalists. The returning good sense of our country threatens abortion to their hopes, and the preachers believe that any portion of power confided to me, this such as his being elected president, will be exerted in opposition to their schemes. And he's saying the preachers are worried about this, that if he gets elected, he will oppose them. The returning good sense of our country, this that he's beating John Adams, threatens abortion to their hopes, and they, the preachers, believe that any portion of power confided to me, such as his being elected president, would be exerted in opposition to their schemes. And they believe rightly, for I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility over every form of tyranny over the mind of man. But this is all they have to fear from me, and enough, too, in their opinion. End quote. The very quote which Scalia will use to tell you that Jefferson was a proponent of religion being part of government is the exact opposite. Now you know, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. In fact, in his notes on Virginia, Jefferson laid it out clearly. He said, and I quote, "The legitimate powers of government extend to such acts only as are injurious to others. But it does me no injury for my neighbor to say there are 20 gods or no god. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg," end quote. Well, they say, the American law was based on English law, which is based on the Ten Commandments. Now, again, as somebody who was raised in the Christian church and considered, I still consider myself a Christian, and you know, wouldn't it be nice? But no, I'm sorry. Ain't the case. In fact, of the Ten Commandments, there are really only two that are parts of our law: don't steal and don't kill. And those predated Christianity. Those predated Judaism. Those you find those precepts among people who have been living in the jungle of Borneo for 10,000 years with no contact with the rest of civilization. They didn't need God to tell them that. They'd already figured that out a long time ago. And in fact, Jefferson points this out. In a February 10th, 1814 letter to Dr. Thomas Cooper, he says, "Finally, in answer to Fortescue Allen's question why the Ten Commandments should not now be a part of the common law of England, we may say they are not because they never were." Anybody, Jefferson said, who suggested that the Ten Commandments were the basis of American or British law was, quote, mistakenly believing a document that was a manifest forgery. Here's, again, another quote from Jefferson in the same letter. He says, Christianity was not introduced until the 7th century, this in England. The conversion of the first Christian king of the Heptarchy having taken place around the year 598, and that of the last about 686. Here, then, was a space of 200 years during which the common law was in existence and Christianity no part of it. Jefferson goes on to say, we might as well say that the Newtonian system of philosophy is a part of the common law as that the Christian religion is. In truth, the elite alliance between church and state in England has ever made their judges accomplices in the frauds of the clergy, and even bolder than they are. In a January 24, 1814 letter to John Adams, Jefferson makes the same point. And he tracks this all back to a single mistranslation in 1658 that he says has often been repeated by Hume. And in this letter to John Adams, he says, our judges, too, have lent a ready hand to further these frauds and have been willing to lay the yoke of their own opinions on the necks of others, to extend the coercions of municipal law to the dogmas of their religion by declaring that these make a part of the law of the land, these being the Ten Commandments. On June 5, 1824, Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to Major John Cartwright, who had asked him whether the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence had been inspired by the Bible. Jefferson responded, June 5, 1824, our revolution commenced on more favorable ground than the foundation of English or biblical law. It presented us an album on which we were free to write what we pleased. We had no occasion to search into musty records, to hunt up royal parchments, or to investigate the laws and institutions of a semi-barbarous ancestry. We appealed to those of nature and found them engraved on our hearts. He then goes on and congratulates Cartwright for writing that the American Constitution was entirely secular. This was Cartwright's opinion. And he says, I was glad to find in your book a formal contradiction at length of the judiciary usurpation of legislative powers, for such the judges have usurped in their previous decisions that Christianity is a part of the common law. The proof of the contrary, which you have adduced, is incontrovertible. To wit, that the common law existed while the Anglo-Saxons were yet pagans, at a time when they had never heard the name of Christ pronounced or knew that such a character had existed. But it may amuse you to show when and by what means they stole this law in upon us. And then he lays out how, in his time, the religious were trying to claim that the government was founded in religion, when in fact it wasn't. And here we have Scalia saying this. And then Scalia goes on to say, he's talking in a synagogue to a group of Jewish people. He says, the rigid separation of religion and state, as in Europe, would be bad for America and bad for the Jews. He says, do you think it's going to make the Jews safer? It didn't prove that way in Europe, for religion and state to be separated. As if to say, Hitler was a godless person, and that's why he did what he did to the Jews. I mean, that's essentially what Scalia said yesterday in the synagogue. But the reality is that every member of the Nazi army had a belt buckle that said, Gott mit uns, God is with us. That Hitler proclaimed a new Christianity. That one of the major vehicles that Hitler used to embrace himself to the people was his claim that he was a Christian and that he was going to help revive and purify the Christian religion in Germany. It boggles my mind that Scalia says that bringing religion into government is going to make Jews or anybody safer. You would think that the Taliban would have taught us a lesson. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Wynn feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. On Saturday, as hundreds gathered in San Francisco's Union Square for a rally in solidarity with locked-out hotel workers, Mayor Gavin Newsom announced at his office across town that a deal had been reached to suspend the stalemate for a 60-day cooling-off period. Vinny Lombardo has more.
Unite Here Local 2 members who'd been working without a union contract since August 14th struck at four San Francisco hotels September 29th and were subsequently locked out at 10 others by the Multi-Employer Group, a consortium of San Francisco's 14 largest hotels. Rory O'Connor, a bellman at the Four Seasons, says the workers wanted a wage increase but voted for a two-week strike when the hotels tried to eliminate retiree medical, prescription, and dental coverage from about 1,000 Local 2 members.
We've accepted lower wage increases in return for good benefits. It sounds like it's part of the compensation package.
Another sticking point is the contract's length. Union members say they'd like to renegotiate in 2 years while the hotels want a 5-year deal. To Do, secretary treasurer of Unite Here Local 2, says the union also wants to synchronize San Francisco hotel contracts with other cities.
We bring our fight to across North America city. We bring our fight to Hawaii, to Monterey, to Chicago, to New York, to send them the message that we're not going to be isolated in San Francisco.
The rank and file workers at Saturday's rally were elated at the news they'd soon be back on the job and are hopeful that the publicity generated will parlay into the contract they want. For now, the pickets are down. On Tuesday, 4,300 hotel workers will start rotating back into their shifts without conditions while the talks continue. But until a deal is inked, the situation remains tenuous, and Local 2 members say they are prepared to resume the pickets if a fair contract isn't offered. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Till the next time, we'll say goodbye. Till the next time, we'll say goodbye. say goodbye.
And while we're puncturing mythology here, this, I think, is probably one of the more important ones to be punctured. You have heard, you heard it from George W. Bush during the campaign and the debates. You've heard it, you've been hearing it from cons for years, actually, that the nation's medical malpractice crisis is the result of the fact that we have a court system, a legal system that allows people who have been injured by doctors' malpractice. Keep in mind, malpractice meaning intentional injury or injury as a result of incompetence that should have been anticipated. In other words, not just an accident, something that was absolutely avoidable. That's malpractice, right? That the problem was that if you were the victim of malpractice, you could get so much money if you got a trial lawyer like John Edwards, that was the broken system. So the state of Texas said, okay, cool, we will cap malpractice rewards at $250,000. The most anybody can get is $250,000. If they die, if they're disabled for life, it's going to cost them $200,000 a year just to be on a ventilator. Tough luck. The most you can get is $250,000. That's what your life is worth. That's what they said in Texas. They capped them 6 months ago in 2003. And now, 6 months later, GE Medical Protective, which is the largest malpractice insurer in the United States, has come forward and said that they want a 19% increase in rates in Texas. And when they were asked, well, hey, doesn't this cap solve the problem? And they said, quote, this is from their filing, non-economic damages are a small percentage of total losses paid. Capping non-economic damages will show loss savings of 1%, end quote. This is exactly what Edwards and Kerry were saying during the campaign, that all the medical malpractice added up in the country represents 1% or less of the total malpractice cost. Well, why is medical malpractice insurance going up 15-20% a year? Why? Because these companies are not regulated and they can make all the money they want. If there was ever an industry that should be being regulated right now, these guys are just robbing us blind. This is the insurance industry. And that's part of it, actually. The other part of it is that they invested a lot of money in the stock market in the late 1990s, and they lost it when the bubble burst. And so they got to make their profits back. Anyhow, thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira for engineering it, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, to Ben for our archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org, to the folks in our chat room for showing up, to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics, the organic wine company, to Jay for our music, and to you. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom. See you Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone